Last page in the diary. We are indebted to Colleen L. Reese, the author, and the Review and Herald Publishing Association, the printing house, for the copyright. Your honorary reader is Muriel Ferris.
Section 1.
Chapter 1. October 1, 1945. This has been the most wonderful day of my life. I am 13, no longer a child. But that's only the beginning. For my birthday, Dad gave me this diary, only it's more like a journal. He knew I'd never write every day, and when I did write, I'd need more than those little spaces. He's pretty smart about me when he's not too busy. He's a minister. Mom gave me a new sweater, blue, to match my eyes, but my 17-year-old brother Ken gave me the best present of all, a letter from Mike. She's coming home. Mike is the best friend I've ever had, but she's been gone for a long time. I can hardly remember what her family looks like, but I sure remember her. Her real name is Yoshi Mizuki. But when Dad first met her, he smiled and said, "Since we call our Patricia Pat, we'll just call you Mike, if it's all right with you." She really laughed at that. Pat and Mike. I like that. I'd never known any Japanese Americans before we got transferred out here to the Seattle area. The first day we arrived here, Mike came across the street with a casserole and a cake for supper. She said her mother thought we'd be too busy to cook. Mike looked just like a doll I used to have, except the doll had on a kimono, and Mike wore blue jeans, and just like mine. We weren't very polite standing there looking at each other, but we were only 8 and didn't know better. Mom finally came to the door and took the casserole and cake. Then when we got settled, all the Mizukis came over, and that's when Dad nicknamed her Mike. I was sure glad it was only June. A lot of times when we got transferred, I had to start school without knowing anyone. But this time, it was different. Pat put down her stubby yellow pencil and leaned back on her pillow. Since there was school tomorrow, she was supposed to be asleep. But how could she sleep with Mike coming home? And just starting her diary itself was one of the neatest things that had ever happened to her. When she had opened the package, Dad had said, "You're old enough to want to put down some of your private feelings, Pat. There's a lock and key. No one will ever read your journal except you, or even know what's in it." And then he grinned mischievously. "And God." She just looked at him. How like him to remind her that God knew all her thoughts. Sometimes she wished he didn't. She hadn't been very happy with him for a long time. Although she had been afraid to tell Mum and Dad, God wasn't the friendly, heavenly Father she had given her life to when she was small. Glancing around the table, Pat hoped her thoughts didn't show. When she caught Ken watching her with a funny expression on his face, he just grinned and handed her a letter. "My present." Pat looked at the address and then at Ken. "How come all of a sudden Mike's writing to you? To censor or something? Just because you're 4 years older?" Her grumbling evaporated as she read the first paragraph. "Hooray! Mike's coming home! Mike's coming!" She jumped up and hugged her parents and even Ken. "After all this time, they'll be here sometime this week." Flopping into a chair, she felt torn between wanting to laugh and cry. "I knew they'd be coming," Dad said with a smile. "Ever since Japan signed the peace treaty in September, I've known the Mizukis would be back. I wrote Mr. Mizuki last week and invited him to stay with us until they can find a home of their own." Holding up a letter, he continued, "He's coming with Mike, but Mrs. Mizuki and Mama-san won't come until he finds a house." Pat wondered why a little frown crossed her mother's face, but she was too happy to care. Probably Mom was planning how to put them up and what to have for their first meal. She didn't see the understanding in Ken's eyes or the way he closed his mouth, holding back something he had started to say. "What a wonderful birthday present," Pat said, too excited to sit still. "Mike can sleep in my room, naturally. I'm sure glad I got the attic, room with the twin beds when we moved out here. Do you realise the Mizukis have never seen this place? I wrote how we found this old house and fixed it up. I'll take Mike to 4-H and maybe they can find a house near us and go to church with us and... Whoa, let them get here first. Remember, Pat, the Mizukis have been gone a long time. It hasn't been pleasant where they've been. Give them a little time to get used to us as a family again. She stiffened, and her father held up his hand. I know you've written ever since they left, but you aren't 8 or 9 years old anymore. You're both teenagers, so you'll have to learn to know each other all over again. It's been a long time. Too long. Her bitter words burst out. I don't see why God made them go. Mom looked shocked, but Dad's voice remained quiet. We've talked about this before, Pat. God didn't make the Mizukis go anywhere. The anger the girl had carried all through World War II finally spilled over. Even biting her tongue couldn't keep it back. He could have stopped it. The Mizukis are Americans. Mike's brother Kobe is in the United States Army. Why did God let them be shoved off in the middle of nowhere to some concentration camp, shut up behind barbed wire just because some of their ancestors were born in Japan? Dad didn't argue. Instead of looking back at all those terrible times, why don't we be thankful the war's over? He forced a smile. I can hardly wait for Mama San to come. Licking his lips, he added, even your mom can't make Mama San's recipe the same way. Ken laughed. She sure is a neat old lady. I wonder how old she is. For the moment they forgot the past. Even Pat laughed, thinking of Mike's grandmother and the way she cooked. But as Pat lay in bed at the end of her 13th birthday, memories crowded into her mind. Only incidents stood out, but they were things she couldn't just push aside. The way Ken had burst into the house that day yelling, "The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor!" It hadn't meant much to 9-year-old Pat. What had been clear were the things that followed in the next few months. The knocking at the door at 3 o'clock one morning. Mike, white-faced, hands stretched out for help, crying, "Please, our house is on fire!" The look on Dad's face was one Pat wouldn't forget, nor the words she had overheard. "I was afraid this might happen." She had watched the firemen unsuccessfully trying to put out the flames. The Mizukis went home with the Kellys for the rest of the night. Again Pat heard something not meant for her ears. Mr. Mizuki said to her father, "There is no use our fighting. We don't even know who set the fire." Long after the sobbing Mike had fallen asleep next to her, Pat's mind went in circles. Someone had set the Mizukis' house on fire because they were Japanese Americans. Why did God let it happen? The same question raced through her mind in the months that dragged by. There was no answer. The Mizukis found themselves forced to sell or give away almost everything they owned. The authorities had ordered them to move to a center. Pat had seen pictures of them. They were out in the desert with barbed wire around the buildings and guards pacing back and forth. The only thing that helped a little was the way Mike took it all. She had even smiled when she told Pat goodbye, only shaking her head when the Kelly girl asked why God had let it happen. "I don't know, Pat, but I don't blame him." "Well, I do." Pat had hugged her fiercely and then watched her board the train as it slowly chugged out of sight. Mike kept up her courage in her letters. Sometimes heavy black marks hid some of the words in them. Dad said they had been censored. Finally, Pat quit asking why. She had prayed over and over for God to send Mike back. It hadn't happened. As the months went into years, part of the faith in God she had held since childhood disappeared. If only things had been different, Pat sighed. What would Mike be like now? She sounded different in her letters. I wish she had never gone away. Her eyes drooped from fatigue, but her mind kept up the squirrel cage revolving. Finally, she couldn't stand it any more. She switched on her bed light, glad she was in the attic and no one would know she was still awake. The little clock on her table said 12:05. Her birthday was over. The girl reached over and picked up her yellow pencil again and her new diary. For a long time she didn't write anything. Then the words poured out. 12:15, October 2, 1945. My birthday is over. Maybe it's a sign of a new beginning, like for Mike. She won't ever have to live in an awful place like that again. Dad said God would be the only one who ever knew what was in my diary except me. He's right. So God, I might as well tell you, I don't feel like I know you anymore. I don't know you even as well as I know Mike, and she's been gone forever. I have to be honest, I don't like what you let happen to Mike and her family and all her friends. I used to like to go to church, but since all this happened, I hate it. I guess you already know that. It's hard going to church when I've been so upset with you. I'll make a deal with you, God. Even though you could have stopped the war and taken good care of Mike, I'll give you another chance. Mike's coming back. Not because of you, but because the war is over. If you'll fix things so she'll live near me, then maybe I can start believing that you really are in charge of the world. I'm not a child anymore, God. I can't just listen to what Dad and Mom say. I have to find out for myself if you really are everything I used to think you were. I know I still belong to you. Once I gave my heart and life to you, you wouldn't let me go. But I haven't felt you were very interested in me for a long time. God, it's hard to grow up. It was a lot easier when I was little. I look at the picture of Jesus on my wall and I hate being mad at you. You loved me enough to send Jesus to die for me, but why didn't you help Mike and her family when they needed you? Sometimes I can't look at your son's picture. Dad and Mum would feel awful if I took it down, but it reminded me too much of you and how you didn't seem to care anymore. This is your big chance to make everything right again, God. If you'll fix things up for Mike, find them a place out here in Kent so we can be together and all that, then I'll know you can do it. I'll even know you hear prayers and answer. But you'd better hurry. Mike and her father are coming this week. The stubby yellow pencil slipped from her fingers. The diary fell to the floor. The 13-year-old who had given God a second chance had fallen asleep. Chapter 2. October 10, 1945. She's here. Mike's here. I can see the car in the driveway. Mike and her father came on the bus, but Dad drove into Seattle and picked them up at the depot. I don't know why Dad thought it would be best for the rest of us to wait here. Why wouldn't Mike want to see me right away? I sure am glad I have this attic room, because I can see everything. Mike! Pat burst through the screen door like an explosion. Then she stopped on the porch, feeling much as she had when she was almost 9 and had seen Mike for the first time. "Where are your braids?" What a stupid thing to say to the thin, pale girl who had grown so tall. Mike laughed and hugged her. "Same, Pat. My braids were too hard to take care of, so I whacked them off. You haven't changed, still little and blonde. Oh, Pat, it's so good to be here." Why had Mike's greeting opened a pit between them? Pat wondered. The girl shivered, although this autumn day was warm, the leaves bright and glowing beneath a perfect blue sky. She might be the same Pat, but Mike wasn't the same Mike at all. Somehow the Japanese-American girl seemed years older, quieter, with a look in her eyes Pat couldn't understand. "Come upstairs, Mike," Pat chattered all the way. No matter how much she had changed, this was her friend Mike. She wouldn't let there be anything between them. But Dad was right. They'd have to get acquainted all over again. What a pretty room. I like it too, Pat admitted. When we moved here, it was just a mess of old stuff. Mom and I cleaned and painted, and I chose the colours. You always did like yellow. Mike turned from the fluffy yellow curtains against the white walls to the matching bedspreads on the twin beds. Pat, you can't know how it feels to be here. Feeling a lump in her throat, Pat said, I thought you'd never come back. She hesitated. You aren't sick, are you, Mike? You're so thin. No, I'm not sick. But a strange expression flitted across her face. and Pat didn't ask any more questions, although she was bursting inside to find out what had happened in the centre and how Mike had stood it all. "Come on, Mike, Mom will have lunch ready." It was a dandy lunch, a big casserole, tossed salad and lemon pie for dessert, yet neither Mike nor her father ate much. Pat could have bitten her tongue out when she said without thinking, "Don't you like lunch? You aren't eating." That strange look she was beginning to know came to both their guests' faces, but Mr. Mizuki smiled at her. "It's just so good to be here, it's hard to eat." Pat had a feeling she'd said something wrong, but didn't know what it was. That same feeling bothered her over and over during the next few days. It was wonderful to have Mike there with her in what she called her tower room, but she had the distinct sensation that some kind of wall now existed between them. The first night, Pat was all ready for a good chat, and as soon as the light was out, she asked, "Mike, what was it like at that place?" Japanese-American girl was so quiet, Pat wondered if she was going to answer. When she did, her pillow muffled her voice. "If it's okay, Pat, I'd rather not talk about it for a while. Give me time." As she turned over, Pat felt hurt. Hadn't she always been Mike's best friend? Hadn't they shared everything? Why was Mike acting like a guest? A few tears slipped into her pillow, and the next day, while Mike and her father went to look for a house, Pat took out her diary. October 11, 1945. "I don't understand Mike at all. Sometimes she's just like she used to be, laughing and fun. Other times she's so serious I don't even think she is Mike. God, won't you help her forget whatever happened to her while she was gone? It must have been pretty bad. Are you working on things like I asked you to do? I'm sure not getting anywhere with Mike." When Mike and her father had arrived, they had said nothing about church, but when the Kellys got ready the next morning, the Mizukis were still wearing their casual clothing from the day before. "Aren't you going to church?" Pat asked bluntly. "We don't have any other clothing with us." Pat tried to fix things. "The skirt's okay, and you can wear one of my blouses and a jacket. We're about the same width, only you're taller." It even got a laugh from Mike. Ken took Mr. Mizuki to a room and found a clean shirt for him. Yet Pat thought about it all through the service, seeing the way Mike sat with her eyes on her lap. Was it by chance that the topic her dad preached on was "love your neighbour as yourself"? Pat looked at him suspiciously, but was so glad to have Mike with her that she forgot it in a second. One other thing did catch her attention, though. She and Mike had gone on out after the service. "Susie, Bonnie," Pat hollered at her two best girlfriends since Mike had been gone. "Wait, I want you to meet Mike. I mean, you remember Mike, don't you?" Pat wasn't prepared for Susie Parker's response. Susie held her red head high. Her green eyes were cool as she said, "Oh, yes, Mike, so you're back, are you?" She sounded at least 20 instead of 13. Bonnie, pale face spattered with freckles, giggled. "You don't look like Mike any more, do you?" Bonnie always imitated what Susie did, maybe because her father, Mr. Davis, worked for the Parkers. Everyone said he was a yes man, whatever that was. "We have to go now. Goodbye, Pat." Not one word to Mike. Pat was angry. What on earth was wrong with her friends? She saw the shadow in her friend's eyes, but it cleared even before Pat commented. Wonder why they're in such a hurry. The same funny little feeling came back after the Mizukis had returned from house hunting with the news that they couldn't find anything. "But there are lots of houses for rent. I see them all the time on my way to school." "Not to Japanese Americans, Pat," Mr. Mizuki said it quietly. Pat put down her fork. "Just what's that supposed to mean?" She realized how rude she sounded and hastily added, "Sir?" "It simply means that for some people, the war is not over." "That's stupid," she snapped. "Besides, what did you have to do with the war?" She ignored Ken kicking her under the table and his warning glance. "Kobe is still overseas. He fought for America. You and Mrs. Mizuki and Mike and Mama-san wanted him to go. Why should anyone be mad at you?" That's the way the world is, Pat. The girl clenched her teeth. When she could speak again, she spit out the words. Then it's a rotten world. Mike journeyed in for the first time. No, Pat, it's a beautiful world. It's people who get mixed up and make it seem bad. When his sister opened her mouth to say more, Ken stood up. Hey, there's a chocolate cake in the kitchen. Is it for now? You bet, Mom grinned at him. Come on, Pat, help me serve. But the door between the kitchen and the dining room was open. Pat couldn't whisper anything to her mother, though she wanted to ask a million questions. Why couldn't the Mizukis find a house? Why had the girls at church acted so weird? Mike hadn't done anything except be sent to an almost prison. Why blame her? Long after Mike lay asleep in the twin bed that night, Pat remained awake. She thought of writing in her diary, but didn't feel like doing even that. Her mind churned endlessly around. Maybe a glass of milk would stop her tossing and help her sleep. A crack of light showed under the kitchen door as Pat pushed it open. What are you doing up, Ken? He sat at the table, a quart of milk in front of him, along with the revolting peanut butter and jelly sandwiches he always made. Glancing up in surprise, he replied, I couldn't sleep, thinking about the Mizukis. She dropped into the chair across from him. I thought you never thought about anything except playing ball and eating. You'd be surprised. Even the half sandwich stuffed in his mouth didn't keep back the seriousness of his voice. Suddenly Pat wanted to talk to him. He was older, but not so old he would have forgotten about being all mixed up. Ken, what's happening? Mike won't talk about the centre. The Mizukis weren't really very welcome at church. Susie Parker and Bonnie Davis acted strange. What's wrong with everyone? How come God lets people act like this towards Mike and her father? Don't blame God for how people act, Ken exploded. That's their own choice. He stared at her, not even seeing how she had unconsciously reached for part of his sandwich and was cramming it in her mouth. You know, you'll have to decide where you stand too. I don't know what you mean. You will. Pat had never seen his blue eyes so like her own this serious. When they all gang up on Mike and start calling her stuff like Dirty Jap, just where are you going to be? Are you going to stick up for her and lose all your friends? You don't think my friends would do such a rotten thing. They will. Look at how Susie and Bonnie acted right at church. Pat gulped, looked down at the sandwich and threw it on the table. Well, they won't do anything else. Do you think I'll ever let Mike down? I don't know, Pat. I know you want to be a cheerleader this year pretty badly. That's right. I thought Mike and I might try out and... Don't even suggest it. His voice was sharp. I know what I'm talking about. There's a Japanese-American boy in my senior class. Do you know why he's making it? Because he's a top football player. The school needs him. But his sister is having it tough. Of all the stupid, terrible... I agree, but that's the way it is. I'm warning you. Don't ask Mike to try out for cheerleader, not this year. For one thing, she's new. Your school doesn't have football, so your cheerleader elections are late. Even so, it's only 2 weeks until tryouts. It just isn't enough time for people to learn to accept Mike. Leave it alone, Pat. Leave it alone? You sound like some book. Her eyes blazed. How did you get so smart? You act as if you know everything. The look on his face made her anger subside. Was it pity? Patience? I mean it, Pat. You're going to have to choose which is more important to you, Mike or your popularity. Her face turned red as she shoved back her chair, but she kept her voice low. I should have known better than to try to talk with you, Kenneth Kelly. You always look on the dark side of everything. Even as she rushed on, she knew it wasn't true. It was fear making her lash out at her brother. I'm going to have both. I'm going to win that cheerleader election, and I'm going to keep Mike as my best friend. Maybe there's a bunch of stupid kids in your class who are prejudiced. My school isn't that way. Be an ostrich if you want to, Pat, but you're going to find your school isn't any different." He rinsed out his glass and set it on the drain board to dry. "Don't blame the kids too much. Their parents teach them the hatred and prejudice." Then they'd better just unteach them. I've asked God to take care of Mike and make everything good for her, and that's all there is to it. You'll see, Kenneth Kelly." She marched out of the kitchen, but not before hearing his low comment. "Don't expect God to do everything, Pat. You're going to have to help." An ostrich, was she? Pat fumed in the darkness. She'd show Ken, as if she'd lose friends because of Mike. Ridiculous. Yet she couldn't entirely erase the little feeling of fear that something of what her brother had told her might be true. It was a long time before she slept. If she had known how long her older brother sat at the kitchen table, head in hands, trying to figure out how he could help Pat in the fight he knew was ahead, she wouldn't have slept at all. November 8, 1945. "I've never been so angry in all my life. I never knew people could be so terrible. God, I thought you were going to make everything okay for Mike. Instead, things are worse than ever. Where are you? What's wrong with everyone? At least you found the Mizukis a house, but nothing else has gone right at all. Ken keeps telling me you can't expect God to do it all. But what he means by that, I'm sure I don't know." Pat rolled over from where she had been lying on her stomach, thinking of the day they finally found a place for the Mizukis to live. No one seemed to have anything available to Japanese Americans. The house they did rent was in terrible shape. "You can't live here." Pat had looked around the filthy place. The house had been deserted for weeks. Broken windows let in cold air, dirt lay in piles, the walls were scratched and scarred. "We will live here." Mike's voice was quiet. She rolled up her sleeves and started cleaning. It had taken days to get it fixed decently enough for Mrs. Mizuki and Mama San to come. Only once had Mike burst out of her usual calm, just before her mother and grandmother were due. "We had hoped to have something really nice." Her eyes were bleak. "Well, at least we're close to you." Now Pat reread what she'd written, crossing out the last line with a heavy black line. Pat couldn't lie to her diary. She did know what her brother meant. She just didn't want to think about it. It had started that first day in church with Bonnie and Susie. The next day they had come to see her. "Are you still going to try out for cheerleader with us?" they wanted to know. "Of course," Pat stared at her friends. "Haven't we been practicing all summer and fall?" Bonnie giggled and looked at Susie. "We just thought, with your new interests and everything," she glanced across at Mike waiting against the stone wall, "you aren't asking her to try out, are you?" Pat shot a quick look at the Japanese-American girl and lowered her voice, her face turning red. "Naturally not. Ken says she hasn't been here long enough even to have a chance." She didn't add the rest of his little speech. Bonnie and Susie looked at each other and laughed. "Yeah, sure, Pat, just so we know where we stand." On the way home, she had been quiet. Finally, Mike asked her, "Anything bothering you?" Pat kept her eyes on her scuffed shoe, kicking a stone out of the path, trying to keep her voice from sounding funny. "It's just that, well, you know, when we were kids and always said we'd do everything together." Mike nodded. "Cheerleader tryouts are coming up. I didn't know you would be back, so I've been practicing with Susie and Bonnie for all summer and fall." Mike said nothing for a moment and then smiled. "It's okay, Pat. I haven't been at your school long enough to get any votes anyway." Pat gave a big sigh of relief and smiled back, noticing how white Mike's teeth were against her tan skin. Yet when she went to bed that night, it wasn't her smile that she remembered. It was the look of hurt in Mike's dark eyes. Was that what Ken had meant? The idea spoiled the cheerleader tryouts for Pat. Even though the girls tried out in teams, they were voted on individually. Susie and Pat both won, but Bonnie didn't. In fact, she was pretty angry about it. Pat saw her whispering with Susie, casting black looks across at Pat and Mike in the cafeteria. It didn't matter that Bonnie was stiff, too stiff to be a good cheerleader. She had wanted it more than anything. Even so, Pat wasn't prepared for the note on the torn-out notebook paper taped inside the door of her locker that afternoon after school. "You didn't deserve to win, Jap lover." Pat was so angry she could hardly breathe, especially since Mike shared her locker. Mike's books were already there. She couldn't have missed the poison pen note. Crumpling it into a hard ball, Pat wanted to hurl herself against the rotten person who had put it there. A snicker came from up by the drinking fountain. Pat whirled and saw Bonnie and Susie standing there, eyes blazing, chin high, voice deadly. She advanced on them. "Did you write this note, Bonnie?"
"Note? Why should I write a note?"
Another snicker. "This one." Pat uncrumpled it and shoved it under her nose.
"Why, who would do anything like this, even if it is true?"
Suddenly Pat lost control of herself. You... She raised her hand to slap the mocking face, but before she could hit Bonnie, Mike's quiet voice spoke from behind her. "I'm ready now, Pat." Her hand dropped, but her heart continued to pump anger into her face. Pure hate shone in her eyes as she glared at Bonnie and Susie. "Let's get out of here." She bit off the words. "There's a pretty rotten smell." As she marched off, she did not see the little crowd that had gathered, or the angry red flush on Bonnie's face. Although Pat's temper would not let her end it there, she knew better than to mention it at home. Dad and Mom, even Ken, would be shocked to know how close she had come to starting a fight with Bonnie right there in the hall. But the next day, when the English teacher asked the students to write an essay to read in class using any theme they chose, Pat smiled to herself. She knew what hers would be. Long after the rest of the house was dark that night, her pencil flew across the paper. When she finished, she pushed damp hair back from her hot forehead. Just wait until English class tomorrow. Her classes dragged the next day, and she could hardly wait for English. She'd show Bonnie Davis. Sliding into her seat, she waited for Mrs. Smithson to ask for volunteers. For once, she was going to be first. Instead, Mrs. Smithson said, "The essays I asked you to write for today won't be read in class." Pat's heart fell. After all that work. But her ears perked up as her teacher continued. "Our principal has told me our junior high is going to have an essay contest." She held up a form and read it. "Junior High Essay Contest. All students eligible. $50 to be awarded for the best essay on any subject. Winning essay and top two runners-up will be read at a special award assembly at the end of the school year. Essays are due on March 1. It couldn't be more perfect. Pat's face burned with excitement. She would polish her essay until it had to win top prize. Now she would include everything she hadn't had time for in the first try, and she would pick out a title to reach out and grab the judges and win. A glance over at Bonnie Davis caught the other girl scowling. Yes, Patricia Kelly would win, all right, and a whole lot more than $50. Bonnie would be scowling a lot more when the whole student body heard Pat's. "I can hardly wait." Pat spun around the hall after class like a tightly wound top, her skirts flying. Mike just laughed at her, but it didn't dampen her spirits in the least. "I've always been good in English. Some of my teachers even think I could be a writer." She disappeared into a daydream of being an author, of people buying her books and asking for her autograph. Then she shook herself awake as they began their walk home after school. "Mike, I'm going to win that contest." She didn't catch Mike's quick expression as the other girl said, "Maybe I'll enter too." "Great, I won't mind if you win. You're my only competition. I know how well you write." "What are you going to write about?" Squirming, Pat drew a pattern in the dusty road with her shoe. I don't have my exact title yet. How about you?" Mike gazed at a hawk sailing above the big tree ahead. "I have an idea, but it hasn't gelled yet." As November rains gave way to December, Pat's anger at Bonnie subsided a bit. After all, she would get back at her in the contest. In the meantime, Pat had to see her at church and school and couldn't very well refuse to speak to her. But she did wonder at some of the funny things that happened. The first basketball game of the season was also the first time for the cheerleaders to perform. Along with Susie and Pat,
twin girls named Peggy and Meg had been chosen. Pat's heart bounced when she came in the gym on opening night. The four girls threw themselves into their work, performing in perfect coordination. But as the second half started and the girls ran from the floor, Pat's shoe gave way and she slipped, falling right on the sidelines. The other girls dragged her off the court as the game started again. How on earth? She looked at her shoe. How did it come untied? I double knotted it. Susie was impatient. You only thought you did. She turned back to the game, but Pat continued to wonder. Something made her look up straight into Bonnie Davis's eyes. A gleam of triumph flashed in them. Bonnie had bought a sweater and skirt as close to the cheerleader outfit as possible and sat with them. Did she think that if something happened she'd get to be a substitute? Yet how could she? Then Pat remembered. Just before they'd gone out for their last half-time yell, Bonnie had been fumbling around on the floor. Sorry, I dropped my popcorn. The girl was all over their feet. Could she have managed to untie Pat's shoe? A mighty roar came up as the team captain scored and Pat forgot Bonnie. Randolph, Randolph, he's our man. If he can't do it, nobody can. It was the first of several annoying incidents to happen to Pat. One time a button was missing from her blouse. She borrowed a pin to fix it since she wore it only under her cheerleading sweater. It was more serious when her new white socks disappeared. Pat couldn't go out without them. Bonnie always hung around the cheerleaders while they dressed. Now she grinned wickedly. What's wrong, Pat? Can't you even keep track of your uniform? Pat stared at her, suspicion growing. When the others had all left, she dug in the waste basket where Bonnie had been standing. Beneath several layers of paper towels, she found her new socks crumpled together, tags still on them. She got to her place just before the girls started their cheer, and in time to see the sullen look on Bonnie's face. That night her frustration spilled over to Mike. Bonnie's making my life miserable. I never know what she'll do next. She isn't even supposed to be in there while we're dressing, but the twins won't say anything, and naturally Susie wants her there. If I say anything, it'll be just more trouble. Her friend was sympathetic. All you can do is be on the lookout. She appeared tired, and Pat's conscience sent a queer little feeling through her. Here I am complaining. What about you? Are any of the kids giving you a bad time? She turned Mike around so she could look right at her. I've been so busy I haven't even been watching. Her face a little pale, Mike met her gaze squarely. Yes, Pat, some of them are obnoxious. Pat's ready temper boiled over. Who? I'll fix them. Mike shook her head, tears springing up. Pat, Pat, you can't fight prejudice like that. It just doesn't work. Her words silenced Pat. It was like that so many times. Just when Pat was willing to go out and battle for Mike, her friend stopped her with a look or a comment. Sometimes, Mike, you seem even older than Ken. The beautifully curved mouth of the Japanese-American girl trembled. Sometimes I feel old, Pat. Those years, they were so long. It was the closest she had come to talking about the center since she had returned. After that one time, Pat had kept still and pushed back her curiosity. When Mike wanted to tell her about it, she would. Yet sometimes the look in Mike's face made Pat want to cry without knowing why. It had been there the first day at church and the day they stepped into the filthy house that had to be home for the Mizukis. But it partially disappeared during the past few weeks, maybe because early December had brought a Christmas spirit. In the next few days, even Bonnie's tricks ceased. If Mike was getting flack from anyone, she kept it to herself. Pat appreciated the quiet. She hated fighting all the time, having to defend Mike. Maybe things were getting better. The Mizukis were settled. Everyone knew Mike was in school to stay. Pat even dared write in her diary. You know, God, things are getting better. Thanks. Some of the girls at school are starting to include Mike. Sally asked her to eat lunch with her today, but Mike was waiting for me. I'm sure glad you're working on it, God. I hate being mad at you. I even hate being mad at Susie and Bonnie. When Mike went on and on being locked up about a million miles away, it was hard to believe you were still kind and loving. She says there's a reason for everything, but I couldn't see any reason for that. There's no sense in people acting so terrible. Anyway, God, I'm sure happy things are better. But the next day, on December 7, 1945, when Pat and Mike walked into their first class, a sign on the blackboard greeted them. Huge black letters on a white piece of paper declared, "Remember Pearl Harbor." It was also the day Pat ran home from school, climbed to her room, and took down the picture of Christ that had hung on her wall as long as she could remember. Chapter 4, December 15, 1945. What a rotten Christmas this one is going to be. Remember Pearl Harbor. Every time I think of that day, I see Mike's face. She just looked at the words and then took her seat. I was so mad I couldn't even move. The teacher had to walk around me to get in the door. Boy, was he ever furious. When he erased the blackboard, his fingernails screeched against it. He didn't even notice. "Never in my life have I known any worse people than those who write anonymous notes," he said. It wasn't just what he said, but the look on his face and the way he said it. If I'd written it, I'd have shriveled up right there. I wonder if it was Bonnie or even Susie. "Pat, time for choir practice." She sighed and straightened her skirt. Usually she loved getting ready for Christmas. Not this year. After a lot of persuasion, Mike had come to choir, but the others hadn't welcomed her. Still, the choir director beamed when he heard her high soprano voice and even gave her a solo part. But between Susie and Bonnie and some of the others, she found no pleasure in singing of "Peace on Earth, Goodwill to Men," and neither did Pat. Mike was already there in the back row when Pat arrived. It had taken time to shake the snow from her coat and scarf. If it kept up, they'd have a white Christmas. Somehow it softened Pat's anger that had troubled her lately. Maybe it was because the world looked so clean, so pure, so free from contamination. "What's this?" Pat looked up in surprise at the question. The choir director was glaring at Bonnie and Susie. "You aren't going to stay in the choir?" Instantly, Pat froze to the spot. What next? She could feel something coming, something terrible. Bonnie's voice was loud and defiant. "Everyone thinks the same thing. It might as well be said out loud. No one wants a..." She pointed her bitter words at Mike. "Jap, singing a lead part in our Christmas program. Everyone knows Japan is a heathen country with idols and everything. They don't even believe in Christ. Why should they celebrate his birthday?" "That's enough," the director roared. "You may be excused, Miss Davis, now." He waited for her to leave. Bonnie turned to the others. "Come on, you all said you felt the same way." No one moved, not even Susie. Her face red, Bonnie demanded, "Come on, Susie, you told me to speak up." Susie's expression flickered from mad to flustered and upset. She spoke in a mutter, but everyone in choir heard her. "I didn't tell you to go this far. I'm not quitting choir. My folks would kill me." Bonnie stared at her. "Great, just great. You hatch up all this and then leave it to me. What about the rest of you?" Gradually it sank in. No one would support her. Without Susie's leadership, Bonnie was nothing. She had done what she had been told, and now not even one person would stand by her. If Pat hadn't been so furious, she would have felt sorry for her. Big tears came to Bonnie's eyes, probably from sheer fury. Turning on her heel, she started for the door. "Wait!" Every eye turned to the tall, thin, dark-haired girl in the back row. "Don't go, Bonnie. We need you in the Christmas pageant," Mike said. Pat's fingernails dug into her hands. How could she? But Mike had slipped from her seat and walked over to the Davis girl. "Please, Bonnie, stay. We really need you."
Section 2.
No one hardly breathed. Bonnie looked at Mike, suspiciously at first. Was it a trick? A way to get back at her? But as she saw nothing but steadiness in Mike's dark eyes, two big tears spilled over from her own. She opened her mouth to say something, but before she could, the choir director snapped, Everyone to their places. We've got to get this practiced. He looked sternly from face to face. Before we drop this, I'm going to add one thing. This is God's house, not yours or mine. From now on, you had better remember it. The rest of the choir practice was a blur to Pat. How could Mike do it? Why? She hadn't even acted mad, just sorry for Bonnie. I could never act like that. The words repeated themselves over and over in her mind. A little voice deep inside reminded, "You could if you were more like Mike." Pat's mouth sang the right words. At least the choir director didn't bawl her out, but her inner voices went on all through the practice. What makes Mike so different? Why doesn't she lash out the way I do? She doesn't even fight back. Her way seems to work, doesn't it? A second voice said. Look what happened to Bonnie. Yes, look what had happened to Bonnie. Choir practice hadn't been over more than 2 minutes when she went straight to Mike. I'm sorry, Mike. This time the tears were real, not just from frustration and anger. It's all past now, Bonnie, the Japanese-American girl replied softly without a trace of anger. What counts is the future. As she had done so many times since Mike had come back, Pat just stared at her. She seemed grown up apart from Pat. Separation had seemed to have matured Mike years beyond her. For a minute, fear clutched Pat's heart. Did it mean Mike wouldn't be her friend anymore? Then the next second, Mike's gaze caught hers. Her smile broke down the wall that had started to build up in Pat. No matter how grown up Mike might be, she was still the same friend, the same best friend ever, and always would be. Pat hugged the thought to herself, but later that day she had the shock of a lifetime. Added to all the others, it was almost too much. Pat, can you come over and spend the night tonight? Sure, Mike, but since we have to be back for another practice later, wouldn't it be closer for you to stay with me? Okay, I'll ask my mother. That evening, Mike appeared at the Kelly house, rosy-cheeked from the snow and covered with flakes. She was carrying an overnight case with her school clothes for the next day. Hi, Mike. Ken met her at the door. Mom was whipping up a big cake and Dad was laying a fire in the fireplace. When choir practice ended, they would have something special to look forward to. All through practice and then as the family visited around the fire, Pat felt that she was right on the edge of something. Of something big and maybe frightening. There had been a tone in Mike's voice that afternoon when they talked about staying the night together that had been different. She had something on her mind. In a way, Pat was almost afraid to find out what it was. She was extra quiet as they brushed their teeth and got into their pajamas, then curled up in the twin beds. For a minute she wished she could hold back time. Pat didn't want to hear whatever Mike was going to say, or did she? Finally they turned the light out. Pat. Yes, Mike? If you will listen, I want to tell you about the center now. Here it was, the time Pat had looked forward to yet dreaded. Mentally she braced herself. Go ahead, Mike. For a long time the other girl didn't say anything. Was she trying to sort out everything? When she did at last start, for a moment the Kelly girl almost wanted to stop her. Pat, I can't ever make you see what it was like. But it's time you knew something about it. I saw the way you looked at me today in choir. You wondered how I could speak kindly to Bonnie after what she did. Pat didn't deny it. She had wondered and still did. It's because of where I have been. Pat felt her heart thudding in her chest. What could cause that lost, lonely feeling that Mike's simple words stirred within her? She was almost afraid to hear what was coming and held her breath. Then Mike started her story. Pat lay rigid, living with Mike everything that had happened, from the time they had said goodbye all those years before. Mike stood silently between her parents, Mama San on the other side of her father. She was almost afraid to move. If she shut her eyes, would that long line of hastily constructed barracks, elbowing one another for space, disappear? No, they were there to stay. So was she. Dust covered from the hot, dry wind blowing sand against them, those barracks represented home to thousands of people. Ugliness, emptiness. Soon the buildings would be filled with people taken from their homes, shuttled and shunted to the centre. Mike did close her eyes, but opened them again immediately. She did not want to see again the crowded trains, the tags that had been pinned to each member of her family, then the long ride, the slow line moving in through the barbed wire fences, past sentry-patrolled gates, to this. "How can we live here?" Her voice was only a whisper. "We will live. We have each other." Mr. Mizuki's arm tightened around her. "Come." The bundle of things they had been able to carry was pitifully small. Mike helped her father carry the pieces of clothing and a few treasured items. She could not think about what had happened. To do so was to remember the furniture and the home they had already lost. A spasm of pain twisted her smooth face, and she bent for a bundle. If she complained, it would only hurt her parents and Mama San. No, she must be strong, must keep to herself all her 9-year-old fears. As her father said, they were all together. All but Kobe. He had already enlisted in the military, fighting for the very country that had sent his family to the center. A wave of bitterness threatened to engulf her. Then she thought of what Mr. Kelly had told her. God would take care of them. She would believe that and wait. Mama San bustled ahead, throwing open the door of the room assigned to them. "We are fortunate." Her wrinkled face was strangely at peace in the foreign surroundings. "There are only 4 of us, yet we have the same amount of room as larger families." "It doesn't seem fair, does it?" Mrs. Mizuki glanced around the room, empty except for 4 army cots. "Some families have many children, and yet they are given a place no bigger than this." "It is the way it is." Mike was to remember her father's reply many times in the following weeks and months, when anything came up that seemed impossible to bear. His quiet reminder gave them the strength to endure. "It is the way it is." One afternoon, Mike paused at the opening of boxes from Sears and Ward's. The catalogues had been a blessing. Through them, they had transformed their room from a shack to a resemblance of home, brightening it with colourful curtains, small rugs, and simple bedspreads. "Mother, you could make a cave into a home," the girl exclaimed. In spite of her rebelliousness against their surroundings, Mike sent a glance of approval around the spotless room. "She has always been like that." Mama San was busily stringing a divider curtain on a wire. "She has a homemaking heart." "If only I had a stove and could cook our own meals," Mrs. Mizuki sighed. "The food in the mess halls is adequate, but it just isn't like our own cooking." "No, it isn't," her husband put in. "But then tar paper barracks aren't like our home either." Mike crossed to her father. "We don't have a home. It burned. What will we do when they let us go home?" "We will find something. God will provide." His tranquility calmed her, but still she was not satisfied. "Father, why is Mabel here? She isn't even Japanese-American. She is white." "Mabel is here because her foster parents are Japanese. Even though she is white, she came with her family." Mike stared around the little room, crude in spite of all their efforts. "Father, do you hate the American government for sending us here?"
"No, Yoshi."
"Why don't you?" she persisted. "When we get away from here, will we go to live in Japan?" "Japan? Why would we go there except to visit?" Mr. Mizuki took her to the door and opened it a crack. The bitter cold began to creep inside. The heat and dust had given away to freezing weather. Pointing to the stars and stripes hanging limp from the flagpole above the compound, he declared, "My daughter, that is our flag. This is our country. Some day we will be honored for our indignities." He pulled her closer. "You must never forget this, Yoshi. America belongs to us as well as to all the others who live here. I am Isiai, born in Japan, while you are Nisiai, born in the United States of Japanese parents. Therefore, you will be allowed to become a first-class citizen, as I never was.
You will bring to this country the respect and dignity of Japan, but you will be American. You are American. Will you remember that? Mike didn't fully understand her father's solemn voice, but was afraid to say so. I will remember. She shivered, and her father closed the door, pulling her back into the warm, bright circle of her family. But I will be glad when we can go home, wherever it will be. Chapter 5. Mike fingered the last letter from Pat, worn, ragged from carrying it with her. Mama-san, when we get home, will Pat still be my friend? What if she changes? Her handwriting looks different now. She sighed, it's been so long. Maybe she won't like me any more. Won't you like her? I will always love Pat. Then, my little Yoshi, you should know that her love also will endure. It seemed incredible that time could pass in such a place. First a year, then a second. In the winter of that second year, something happened to change Mike. She had struggled to keep her faith in God, had told herself over and over he still cared, even if they had to live without family privacy. The Mizuki family were part of thousands of others who slept in barracks, ate together in mess halls, went to school in other barracks. Because the Japanese tradition valued the family so highly, it was hard for them to live as just part of a faceless, collective mass of people. Furthermore, even the country was discouraging. The freezing winters, miserable summers, the endless sagebrush and desert disheartened the people. It was growing harder for Mike to accept the idea that God was really there. Could even he live in such a place month after month and not become weary? Then Mike made a new friend. Papa-san was an old man. The whole camp had come to know and love. Short, with a grey beard, he was her image of a typical and very old Japanese man. Papa-san had not stayed with Japanese tradition in religion. He had found Jesus when he first came to America. Once he had accepted the Lord as his own Savior, his greatest joy was telling others about his faith. Papa-san, Mike sat at his feet, is it hard for you to remember God's goodness here? No, my child. He looked at her fondly, touching her hand with his own work-worn, veined hands. But all the things that people have done to us, what about them? Love filled the old man's face. Yoshi, the past isn't important. What counts is the future. You cannot change the past. Her face screwed up in puzzlement as she tried to understand. You mean we should just forget everything that has happened? Ah, no, my child. We must never forget the past, but we must look to the future for a better day. If we hold bitterness, does it hurt those who have wounded us? No, it hurts only us. Our Lord Jesus forgave his enemies. Can we do less? The girl constantly found herself drawn to Papa-san. Always he offered her hope, a steadfast assurance of happiness in America. She accepted the Lord Jesus as her own Savior even more than she had done when she and Pat had confessed him together so long before. Then the coldest day of winter, Mr. Mizuki entered their barracks and slumped into a chair, worry lining his face. Papa-san is very sick. Trembling, Mike jumped to her feet. Papa-san sick? But I saw him only yesterday. It is true, Yoshi. Last evening he went out to see someone in a far barracks. His daughter waited and waited, but he did not return. At last she searched for him. He was huddled in the cold against the side of the mess hall. No one was there to hear him cry out. He had stumbled over something and could not get up. Now the doctor says he has pneumonia. Mike was too numb even to cry. She loved Papa-san. He had helped her more than anyone else at the center. Now, she refused to think about it. Instead, she lay awake praying. Surely God would not take Papa-san. She needed him so much. Later that night, her father's hand awakened her. Papa San's daughter stood in the room. Come, Yoshi, my father wishes to see you.
Is he better?
The woman shook her head. No, he is not.
Mike was trembling as she entered the old man's room. His breathing was heavy and harsh.
Oh, Papa San, she involuntarily cried. This place,
and she bit back the rest of her sentence, has killed you.
Papa San reached out his gnarled hand that had so often rested on her own. No, Yoshi, only the Heavenly Father gives and takes life. Remember, my friend, that the past is not important, only the future counts. Soon I go to meet my Heavenly Father. I do not go hating. My future is with him. His eyes closed, and Mike stumbled to the door, tears raining down her face, washing away some of the bitterness. She wasn't even surprised when later that day her father told her that Papa San was gone. But in her heart, where his words stamped deep, the past is not important, only the future counts. Time dragged on. Mike was quieter now, becoming more grown up. The death of Papa San had altered her life. No longer could she run uncaring with the other children. The big emptiness inside, she discovered, was being filled with the presence of another friend, Jesus. She clung to what Papa San had taught her and waited. Through the weeks and months following, she thought of the many things they had discussed. One conversation remained especially clear in her mind. She could close her eyes and still see Papa San as she had asked, "Why did the government say we were sent here for our own protection? Isn't it a lie?" "There are things that could happen from prejudice." The old man's face was grave. "We're safe here." And then it was over. The government released the Mizukis to go to Salt Lake City, where Mr. Mizuki had a job promised. Mike wondered how people would treat them in Utah. Would they find the prejudice Papa San had said was outside the barbed wire fences that had held them for so long? When would they be able to go back to Washington? She asked her father. Not for a while, Yoshi. The war is not over yet. We must wait. Those on the West Coast are terribly afraid. They must learn we are not something to fear. When the little family of four walked out through the gates, Mike felt as if she had been released from prison. Her parents and Mama San, eyes straight ahead, did not look back. But Mike did. She turned for a final glimpse of the encampment. It was just as drab and ugly as when she had first seen it. No, not quite. The Japanese Americans had made an imprint. They had brought in sagebrush and stones to form strange gardens, little spots of desert beauty. The tar paper barracks were the same, though. The dust still blew. The last thing Mike saw was the flag waving in the breeze. She kept her eyes on it until the center was out of sight. She hoped forever. Deep inside, her father's words had planted a seed, a swelling of pride. Father had been right. It was her flag, too. Mike's quiet voice slowed and then stopped. Pat leaned back against her pillow, feeling as if she had come back from a long journey with her. She shivered and pulled her blankets closer, remembering how cold Mike said it had been in the center. The Japanese-American girl's voice was tired and a bit hoarse when she spoke again. "Pat, it may be hard for you to understand. We were not tortured or anything like that, and we had enough food. It was just a sense of not being free, of being deprived of homes and privacy. To Japanese-born people, this is very important. Yet we learned the only way to handle it was to wait." In the darkness, her hand reached across the space between the twin beds. "I'm glad the waiting is over and we're here with you." At first, Pat couldn't think of anything to say. Then she whispered, "Mike, Dad always says good comes from everything and that there is a purpose in everything that happens. Do you believe that?" "Of course, Pat. If I hadn't known Papa San, my life would have been missing something.
God had a purpose even in letting us go there. I don't believe it. You can't tell me there was anything good in your going to that centre. Prison camp, I call it. Just like a jail, only worse. Out there in the middle of a desert. All the anger of the past 4 years filled her voice. All through the war I kept asking God to get you out of there, but he didn't. Mike's voice had grown soft. Is that why you took down your picture of Christ? No. Pat sat up in bed, huddled in the blankets. I was fair with him. I even gave him a second chance. I told him when you came home that if he'd work things out, then I'd be able to see the kind and loving father everyone says he's supposed to be. He hasn't worked anything out. I took down Christ's picture because I couldn't bear to look at it any more. It reminds me that God hasn't made things better. Her voice choked up for a moment. I took it down on December 7. Silence hung between them as the image of that cruel banner, "Remember Pearl Harbor," floated in their memories. And then Mike asked, "Do you really think words can hurt me, after all the years where I have been?" Pat caught her breath. "How can they not hurt? Do you like being pointed at and laughed at, even hated by some of the kids?" "Of course not, but I just don't let it hurt too long." Pat could sense her snuggling under her covers. What a strange thing to say. "Can you honestly see any good in your spending all those years in that horrible place?" As she lay stiffly in the dark waiting, she tried to control the anger that shook her body. "Yes, Pat, I can. I thank God for those years." "Mike, how can you?" Her horrified voice dropped to a whisper again. "Isn't it blasphemous to thank God for such an awful thing?" "No, Pat. Even though I got discouraged over and over, I found something at the centre that can never be taken from me. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the whole world. I found the best friend I'll ever have." Mike didn't catch the other girl's half-sob or the wave of shock her words caused. Nor could she see the way Pat clutched her chest, wondering how such pain could go through her. "Just when I felt the world might as well end," Mike said, "he came. It made all the difference in the world. He went through so much. It helps me keep from being hurt. Whenever I feel alone, I think of him." Pat felt as if she'd been stabbed. She also felt guilty. How could she be jealous of an old man, especially one who was dead now? Yet all through the war, all that time she had been writing Mike, her friend had loved someone else more. It hurt. Could things ever be the same again between them? "Girls," Mom's voice interrupted their whispers, "no more talking. Tomorrow's a school day." Glad for an excuse not to have to discuss things any more, Pat mumbled goodnight to Mike and then lay stiff as a poker, unable to sleep. Her thoughts jumbled together. Her breathing felt funny. She felt the same feeling in her stomach that had been there the time a car had run over her kitten when she was only a child. When Mike's soft breathing showed she was asleep, Pat cautiously reached for her flashlight and her diary journal she kept on the nightstand. Crawling under the covers and turning on the flashlight, she managed to write in the cramped space. "Late December 15. I feel as if the world just ended. All the time she was gone, I at least knew I was first with Mike, just like we promised when she went away. Now she says the best friend she will ever have is the old man from the centre, Papa San. Mike isn't mine any more. We'll probably still be friends, but someone else has taken my place." Chapter 6, December 25, 1945. Maybe it would have been better if Mike hadn't come home. Pat stared at the words on the page and then ripped it from her diary. How could she have written them? Yet wasn't it true? She flipped back to the beginning of her diary. October 1. Most wonderful day of my life. A letter from Mike. She's coming home. October 2. I'll make a deal with you, God. She snapped it shut and threw it across the room. Christmas was supposed to be happy,
but she'd never felt more miserable in her life, not even when she was so mad at the way Mike was being treated. Mike. Pat snapped her mouth shut in a stubborn line. She didn't even want to think about her. The girl's return had brought nothing but trouble. Worst of all had been the past 10 days since Mike had confessed to breaking their friendship. I could have stood everything else, Pat told the lone sparrow at the bird feeder outside of her window. It helped to say it out loud. How could she have a better friend than me? I wrote and stuck up for her and waited. But she loves that old man who died, Moore. Sudden anger dried her wet eyes. All right, she has a friend. So can I. Let her keep the memory of Papa San. I have lots of friends at school. I don't have to depend on her. Pat stuck her chin out. From now on she would go her own way and let Mike do what she wanted. If she hesitated in her new plan that evening when Mike and her family came for dinner, it didn't show. Pat was polite, almost too polite, making everyone feel at home. She picked at her food, not shoveling it in hurriedly as she usually did. No one knew it was because the excellent Christmas dinner tasted like sawdust in her mouth. Is something wrong with you, Pat? Pat smiled vaguely. What could be wrong? We never did get to finish talking, Mike whispered back. You've been so busy cheerleading and everything. Pat ignored the wistfulness in Mike's eyes. Probably she just wanted to talk some more about Papa San. I guess you're right. I really am busy these days. She glanced away from Mike's hurt expression. Excuse me, I have to help bring in dessert. Merry Christmas, everyone. Mom held up a white frosted cake. She set it on the table and they all joined hands for a special prayer. Pat could feel Mike's hand in hers, cold. Was Pat sick? But Pat jumped up as soon as they ate the cake. I'll do the dishes, she said with a forced smile in Mike's direction. Thanks, I don't need any help. Ken's comment followed her to the kitchen. Hey, what's eating her? I don't know, Mike replied, sounding tired. Something must be. In the kitchen, Pat furiously scraped and stacked the dishes. In record time, she had them washed and wiped, even put away. But she knew when Mike came to the doorway and paused. She stiffened her shoulders as she deliberately kept on doing dishes. Mike sighed and went away. The days between Christmas and New Year passed, or as Pat said, dragged. Without Mike, she had nothing to do. He hadn't realized how much she counted on her for friendship. Then just before New Year's Day, Susie Parker called. Hey, Pat, I've got the neatest idea for a special club. Can you come over this evening? I'm not sure, Susie. I think we may be having company. Her voice trailed off, one finger tracing patterns on the telephone stand. Find out, will you, and call me back right away. She banged down the phone. Pat's feet dragged towards the kitchen. Mom, Susie Parker wants me to come over tonight. Can I? The mother looked at her in surprise. Why, Pat, you know the Mizukis are coming. So what? Do I have to stay home every time they come? They're here all the time. Mom wiped flour from her hands. Is something wrong between you and Mike? What could be wrong? I don't know, but for you to ask to go out when she's coming over is pretty strange. She could feel her face turning red. Mike has other friends. Why can't I? Besides, it's about a special club. Probably something to do with the cheerleaders. Why don't you take Mike with you? Why should I? She wasn't invited. If she was, Susie would invite her personally, not through me. You may go for 1 hour, Pat, but you're to be back before the Mizukis leave. Pat called Susie. I can come, but only for 1 hour. We're having company. That's okay. It won't take that long to talk about our club. The Parkers still had their Christmas tree up, and Susie led Pat, Bonnie, Peggy, and Meg into the living room. A big fire roared in the fireplace, and Pat dropped into a chair with a sigh of relief. It was good to see the other girls again. Susie's red hair shone in the firelight, and her eyes sparkled. I've been thinking. We need to have a special club. We all live close to one another, and we can have a pledge and a password. We can help each other with homework and all be together at games and stuff. Bonnie's always with us anyway, and we're all cheerleaders. Don't you think that would be great? Yes, what kind of club? What's its name?
Questions flew thick and fast. Susie held up her hands.
I thought we could be called the Star Club. You know, that history assignment about the flag, the one that told that they put stars on the flag to stand for states. Besides, stars are patriotic. We can pledge to always work for our country.
The idea of a club of their very own thrilled the girls.
Who's all going to be in it? Bonnie asked.
Her face turned red, and then she added, I just thought it might be nice to ask Mike.
The room got still.
Susie's smile was unpleasant.
Oh, I thought we'd just have the club to ourselves. There are 5 points to a star, and there are 5 of us.
Pat knew that Susie just didn't want Mike. For a moment, Pat felt like walking out. Then she heard Mike's voice in her mind, the best friend I'll ever have. Her pale face still red, Bonnie persisted. There are 6-pointed stars. Mike's the only other girl of our age who lives close. I think we should include her, don't you, Pat?
Pat opened her mouth and then closed it.
Not really, she said finally, sounding totally disinterested. I don't see why we need to. After all, Mike has other friends.
Was that her own voice so bitter?
For a minute she felt as if Mike was standing in the corner watching.
Bonnie and the twins stared at her, but Susie's mouth turned up in triumphant smile. She had got her own way and was pleased.
I have to go. Stumbling across Pat's feet, Bonnie ran from the room, leaving them all in a state of puzzlement.
What's wrong with her? Pat wanted to know.
Again Susie laughed, this time unpleasantly.
Oh, she's all excited since that choir deal, off her rocker. Ever since then she's been hanging round Mike all the time.
After a pause she added, we don't need her anyway. There's a new girl moving to our neighbourhood. Her name is Karen. She's going to live right next door with her aunt and uncle. We'll ask her to be our 5th member.
Karen moved in next to Susie the next week. The Star Club had weekly meetings at one of the girls' houses where they giggled and talked and ate chocolates and cookies. At the basketball game, they hung around together. Sometimes Pat would glance up from cheering and see Mike watching her. Most of the time, Mike now associated with Bonnie. As the days went by, Pat couldn't believe what was happening. Bonnie, who had been so hateful, now seemed to be the most helpful girl at school. She still refused to be part of the Star Club and stuck with Mike. But she wasn't so pale and homely anymore. She looked kind of like the way Mike had looked when she talked about her new friend. The two girls even sat together in church and listened, really listened. Usually Pat listened for the first 5 minutes of her father's sermon and then daydreamed through the rest of it. About 3 weeks after the Star Club formed, Pat stood beside her locker. It had been a miserable day. She had a headache. She'd left her English homework on her desk at home, and lunch had been a disaster, and so she was in no mood to have Bonnie come up to her.
I'd like to show you something, Pat.
The Kelly girl's misery boiled over. I don't feel like it. Some other time.
Bonnie's quiet voice was firm.
Now, Pat.
Surprised, Pat let her lead her to a locker a few doors away from Mike's and Pat's.
Look.
Pasted inside Bonnie's locker was a big sign, just like the one that had been in Pat and Mike's locker when the Japanese-American girl just returned. Jap lover.
Pat stared, shocked. In Bonnie's locker.
Then, it wasn't you that time?
She still couldn't believe it.
No, the handwriting's the same, isn't it?
It was, slanted with capital E's.
But why didn't you tell me? Why did you let me think it was you?
Bonnie's face turned red.
I wanted to get in big with Susie. She's pretty and popular. That's why I acted that way in choir, too. Susie told me to.
Pat gasped. You did all that and then wouldn't join the Star Club.
I know it sounds dumb, but Pat, that was before I got to know Mike and before she told me about her friend.
That familiar stab of jealousy blinded Pat to the shine in Bonnie's eyes. First Papa San, now Bonnie. Pretty soon she'd be at the complete bottom of Mike's list of friends. So who cared? Let Mike go. She could make her own friends. Yet deep inside, Pat felt as if she had been betrayed.
That friend of Mike's.
Pat pulled herself together. I'm not interested. Marching back to her locker, she jerked her books out and slammed the door, leaving Bonnie gaping after her. So she was rude. She just didn't want to hear anything about it. By the time Pat got home, she'd worked herself into a real mad, as Ken called it. Her head ached, she hurt inside, and even her throat felt sore. Going to bed early, she lay there boiling over inside. Why had she ever wanted Mike to come back? She was too upset even to write in her diary, but the thoughts raced through her head just the same. It was bad enough when she was gone, not knowing what she was going through. But this, first she has the nerve to tell me, or to try to tell me, all about some friend who's taken my place. Then she turns around and tells Bonnie. Pretty soon the whole school will be laughing at the way I stuck up for her when she first came, and that she doesn't care even one little bit for me. Pat's head felt worse. Mom had given her some aspirin, but they hadn't worked yet. Lying there in the darkness, head throbbing, at first too hot and then too cold, Pat hated life. If this is the growing up that's supposed to be so wonderful, forget it. I'd just as soon die now as to have to feel so rotten. And as for you, God, your chance is over. I guess I was fooled when I was a kid about how good and kind you were. Don't you even care how I feel? I can't ever tell Dad or Mom or even Ken what I've learned, but you know. From now on, I'll handle things myself. You haven't done anything anyway. She laughed aloud a little wildly. Was her temperature going up? So Mike thanked God she had been in a concentration camp, because she found a new and best friend. What a joke. Someday Mike would find out just what kind of a friend she had thrown away when she gave up Pat for that old man she'd met somewhere hundreds of miles away. He was dead. Why did Mike keep on talking about him all the time? Maybe her years in the centre had done something to her mind. Too sick to care, Pat escaped into darkness and slept. Chapter 7. February 14, 1946. Maybe Mike still likes me after all. Today in the mail was a big Valentine to someone special. Although it wasn't signed, I know her writing. Seems so funny not being able just to ask Mike if she sent it, but she's with Bonnie all the time and I'm with the Star Club. We're having a big party at Susie's tonight. Mike and Bonnie aren't invited, but Susie asked a whole lot of other kids. Ken wanted to know yesterday how come Mike never comes over anymore. I don't think he believed me when I said she was too busy. I thought that if I stayed with the Star Club I wouldn't miss Mike, but I do. I wish things were like they used to be before Mike went away. Why do people have to grow up? It isn't any fun. It ruins everything. When I was so sick in January, Mike came over a lot. So did Bonnie. I can't believe how different she is. Susie said it all started because Mike didn't yell at her that time in the choir. It made Bonnie think Mike must really be something. Why do they keep bringing up Mike's friend? How can Bonnie be interested in some old man who's already dead? They act like it's a guy or somebody, but Mike and I promised we wouldn't like boys until we were 14, at least. Bonnie's with Mike all the time now. Mike doesn't need me anymore. Oh, well, at least she still likes me, or she probably wouldn't have sent the Valentine. Pat had a new dress for Susie's Valentine party, bright red with little white collar that had really come back in style. She felt like a Valentine herself. It was the first evening party she'd ever been invited to, and she could hardly wait. Susie had strung red hearts all over her house. 15 girls came from their class, and Susie told Pat, "I invited some of the boys to stop by later for refreshments." A party with boys? What would Mom say? Pat had been to get-togethers with the church kids, both boys and girls, but this didn't sound like any church social. It wasn't. Mr. and Mrs. Parker looked in and met the girls, then disappeared upstairs. As soon as they left, Susie put records on. "Come on, let's dance." When Pat stared at her, Susie laughed a little too loudly. "We want to practice before the boys get here." She saw Pat's look of amazement and a malicious smile crept over her own face. "You aren't chicken, are you?" Pat's face turned red. "Not me. Show me how to dance. I learn fast." No one would have known from seeing her face and dance how miserable Pat was inside. The boys came a long time before refreshments were announced. Pat noticed that none of them were from the church, just ones from school. "Let's play post office," one of them hollered. "We'd better not." Susie cast a furtive glance at the stairs. "Besides," she grinned at the crowd, then looked at Karen, "we have an idea." Karen smiled back. New in town, she was thrilled to be part of the Star Club and had taken Bonnie's place as lady-in-waiting to Susie. "We've been thinking it would be fun to take some more members into the Star Club." Susie smiled again. A tiny warning beat in Pat's brain, but she brushed it away. "New members, great, can we be in it?" Nap, the most aggressive of the boys, was a year older than Pat and Susie and had been held back in school. He was always giving the teachers trouble when he could get away with it. Now he looked at Susie as if she were the smartest girl on earth. Tired of leading only girls, Susie soaked up the attention. She wanted to influence the whole class and be elected class president next year. "That's what we thought. We thought we'd add some more girls and some boys and call ourselves the All Stars." "Great idea. You can be president and I'll be vice president." Nat wasn't letting anything slip by. "Say, why don't we have some special initiation stunts for the new members?" Susie tried to hide the gleam in her eyes. "That's just what Karen and I thought. We could make up different stunts for each person we initiate. You know, like having to wear their clothes backward or eat left-handed or stuff like that." Again that tiny warning bell went off in Pat's mind, but she ignored it. "Which ones are we initiating?" "Well, Karen and I thought we'd take in as many of those who are here tonight who want to join. Then we want Bonnie and Mike." Pat really stared at her now. Susie wanted Mike, but her face appeared innocent. Maybe she really felt sorry for all that had happened. "What are some of the other stunts?" But she waved Pat's question away. "We'll think of them. You know, like for Bonnie to wear high heels all day at school. She's always complaining about how tall she already is. Let's leave it for now. Refreshments are ready." Mrs. Parker had gone to a great effort to prepare them. She had made sandwiches cut in the shape of hearts, along with tiny little heart-shaped cookies and cakes. For drink they had red punch. Pat's earlier feeling of being out of place left entirely while she was eating. She decided she couldn't be out of it all her life. If the All Stars wanted to dance, so what? Dad and Mum didn't have to know. All the way home she thought of how happy Mike and Bonnie would be to be in the club. She could hardly wait to tell them. The next day, as soon as she had her room cleaned, Pat called Mike and Bonnie. "Can you come over right away? I've some really great news." But when the three girls were curled up on the twin beds in the tower room, Pat was surprised at their lack of interest in the All Stars. Mike had answered first, after Pat bubbled over with how much fun they'd had the night before and how great it was going to be for almost their entire class to be in the All Stars. "I can't join the All Stars, Pat." There was pleading for understanding in Mike's eyes. After a moment, Bonnie added, "I can't either." Big tears sprang to Pat's eyes. "But why? Just when Susie's trying to include you both and I want you to be in it so much, now you say you can't join. Why?" "I don't believe in dancing any more than your folks do." Eyes blazing, Pat snapped. "I suppose that wonderful friend you met at the centre wouldn't approve." Hurt showed in Mike's eyes as she slowly said, "No, Pat, he wouldn't. It's a waste of time for me. I just don't dance." "I don't either." Bonnie floundered. "That is, not since Mike told me about her friend and..." "Then I guess we won't be seeing too much of each other," Pat interrupted. "I'm going to join the All Stars, where all the fun is." Staring through the window, she saw how grey and radiant it had become. Eager to call Mike and Bonnie, she hadn't noticed it before. Now it was an ugly day. Cheeks red, she whirled back to them. "Just what do you two do for fun, anyway? Everyone who's anyone at all will be in the All Stars. I want to belong. You know how important that is." She didn't expect Mike's answer as a tall girl slowly slid off the twin bed. "Is it, Pat? Is it really?"
Section 3.
Mike glanced at the clock. "I'll have to go. Coming, Bonnie?" Bonnie scrambled to her feet. "Yes, Mum's getting me a new sweater today, any colour I want. Thanks for asking us over, Pat."
For an instant, Bonnie started to say something else, then stopped. Pat didn't respond. She was too hurt. But as they went out the door together, she told them, "Remember, if you don't join the All-Stars, we won't be together." Mike and Bonnie paused in the doorway. "That has to be your choice, Pat. It isn't the way we want it." The next moment they were gone, running down the stairs and out into the rain, leaving Pat standing miserably by her upstairs window. Tears splashed down her cheeks. "Why did they say it was my choice? It's their fault, turning down a chance to be part of everything. They don't need to blame me." Her hands clenched into fists, anger drying her tears as it had done before. Let them be so holy and stick together. They weren't going to keep her from having fun. And the next few weeks were fun. All stars being initiated wore their clothes backward. Some of them had to wear funny hats and mismatched clothing. Pat had been elected secretary and was really proud of the position. This, she thought, was the way growing up should be, instead of always battling a bunch of problems. At first, Mrs. Kelly did not say anything, but finally asked, "Aren't you spending a lot of time with those young people? Do you ever see Mike?" Her daughter tossed her head. "Mike and Bonnie were asked to be members. They turned it down." She hoped her mother wouldn't ask why. She'd have fits if she discovered that the all-star parties were dancers. They thought it was a waste of time. Mrs. Kelly wasn't satisfied, especially when Ken started bringing home rumours his school had heard about the junior high and the all-stars. "They're up to something, and it's no good. You'd better tell Pat to get out of it, and fast." Dad shook his head. "Pat has to learn for herself. We've taught her the values of what's really important. Now she needs to learn how to use them in her own life. She'd better start making decisions while we can still get her out of it if she makes the wrong choices." From her position halfway up the stairs, Pat's lips curled in response. Trust her brother to bring home a bunch of gossip. Probably from jealous people like Bonnie and Mike who hadn't joined. The next day, Susie had a question that jolted Pat. "Pat, you really are dedicated and pledged to the All-Stars, aren't you?" "Sure, you know how hard I'm working for it." A smile of satisfaction crossed Susie's smug face, and a gleam came to her eyes. "I'm glad you finally decided whose side you're on." Then she ran towards class, leaving Pat to stand there and wonder what she meant. "Whose side? Oh, Susie must mean the All-Stars or Mike. It wasn't Pat who had decided, it had been Mike and Bonnie." A pang shot through her, but she quickly suppressed it, thinking of all the fun she was having with the club. But that night Susie's strange question came back to her. The rain had cleared off in the afternoon and a bright moon shone. When Pat looked out her window just before bedtime, the whole street seemed lit up. Funny, she didn't think the moon was that bright. She looked again and then ran screaming at the top of her lungs down the stairs. "Fire! Fire at the Mizukis!" "Oh no, not again!" It wasn't until long afterwards that Pat remembered her father's comment. They grabbed coats and ran for the Mizukis. But this time the house wasn't on fire. Instead, a huge cross blazed in the Mizukis' front yard. Inside the house, the Mizukis watched the flames in horror. "Who did this?" Mr. Kelly demanded. For one awful moment, his daughter caught Mike's glance. Were the All-Stars back of it? Pat had a feeling someone had socked her in the stomach. "We don't know. We saw figures in white sheets." "It can't be possible." Dad had sucked in his breath, biting off the words. Feeling torn apart and guilty, Pat wondered if she should say anything. Maybe it wasn't the All-Stars. But if not, why had Susie acted so strange? Ken asked the question Pat feared as they walked home. They had stayed until the cross had burned down and then scattered the embers. "Do you think it was a kid's prank?" "Absolutely not." Mr. Kelly's voice was sharp, sending a flood of relief through Pat. "It was the work of adults, or so-called adults, the Ku Klux Klan." Mom stopped in the path, face strained.
What? I thought that died years ago.
Dad shook his head. His face looked tired, his eyes hollow. It has sprung up again since the war. Acts of violence against anyone the clan dislikes. Pat finally found her voice, but the words came out only in a whisper.
But why the Misukis?
For some people, the war isn't over. To them, our Japanese-Americans will always be Japs. He said the name as if it were a swear word, and Pat flinched. The Misukis are hated by a few ignorant, vicious people simply because they are different. That night, Pat didn't write in her diary. She was too busy with something else. It was February 28. The essay contest ended the next day. After Bonnie had quit acting so hostile and Pat had gotten busy with the All-Stars, she had let her essay slide. Now the steady beam of her light shone out through the dark night as she picked up her pen and headed the page in her composition book, The Smell of Prejudice. Chapter 8. March 1. Everyone at school today was talking about what happened at the Misukis last night. I could tell some of the kids were pretty mad about cross-burning by the way they came up to Mike. Most of the All-Stars just kept still. I wonder if some of them knew it was going to happen. Nat and Susie glanced at each other when we were talking about it in class. Boy, I haven't seen our teacher so mad since the day someone hung the Remember Pearl Harbor sign on our board. He really let the class have it. There were positively icicles in his voice as he said, I certainly hope when you young people grow up, you will be adults, not a bunch of parading white-sheeted little children. Yoshi, the teachers never call her Mike, I apologize to you and your family from all of us who have outgrown such cruel, childish tricks. Susie looked as if she were going to say something, but our teacher snapped his book open. Pages 231 through to 247. Test tomorrow. Everyone groaned, but at least they didn't keep staring at Mike. Pat, telephone. Pat, Susie, can you come over tonight? Special meeting. Suddenly, Pat didn't want to go. She hadn't liked the way Susie and Nat had acted during class that morning. Besides, she wanted to copy her essay contest entry. They had announced at school that day that the contest deadline would be extended until March 5. One of the teachers who was going to help judge felt that not enough essays had come in yet, and in view of that recommended another few days. Are you still there, Pat?
Yeah, I'll be over, but I can't stay long.
Her feet dragged as she walked towards the Parker house. As usual, Nat and the boys were clowning around while the girls giggled. It didn't fit in with Pat's mood. Not today. She was glad when Susie called them to order. We have some special business to attend to. Nat, she pointed to him, tell everyone what you told me. The boy stood up, his dark eyes gleaming. We all know what happened last night. It was so quiet Pat could hear the clock in the hall ticking. Her stomach felt funny. What was going to happen? We all know that even though our dear teacher made his little speech, there was nothing wrong with what happened. Pat's mouth fell open. Nothing wrong? She started to open her mouth to speak, but Nat went on. I think the All-Stars should be more active in promoting America for the Americans. If we make our outsiders feel unwelcome, they will go where they belong, back to Japan. Unable to believe what she was hearing, Pat glanced around the circle of club members. Some looked as shocked as she felt. Others were giggling. Let's take a vote, Susie said smoothly. All those in favor of the All-Stars helping save America for Americans, stand up. Pat didn't move, neither did Peggy and Meg. Karen was first on her feet, followed by a few of the boys. What's wrong, Pat? Don't know which side you're on? So this was it. Susie singled her out. Somehow she had known all along it would come. Ken had tried to warn her, but she hadn't listened, had just got mad. Deep inside her, a prayer started, something she had kept back for many months. It wasn't long or formal, just a cry for help. Please help me. Everyone stared as she slowly rose to her feet. Good, Susie smirked. I see you're voting for us. Pat shook her head. Her voice was surprisingly strong. Her words came so fast she could hardly get them out without tripping over her tongue. I am standing against you. Susie looked shocked. Had she been that sure of Pat? What's that supposed to mean? The others had sat back down, leaving only Pat facing Susie and Nat, who glared back at her. I mean that as of right this minute I am quitting the All Stars. You talk about America for Americans. What do you think the Mizukis are? Don't you know that Mike's brother Kobe fought for us in the war? He isn't even home yet. He's lying in a hospital getting over some wounds that will make him walk with a limp for the rest of his life. Wounds he got while fighting against the Japanese. Although Pat heard someone gasp, he looked first at Nat, then Susie. It didn't bother the arrogant girl at all. How do you know he got the wounds that way? Maybe he was hurt trying to escape and help the Japanese. I heard he worked as a guide and a spy. How do you know he wasn't shot by Americans? For a moment, Pat closed her eyes as Susie added, I just bet that's exactly what happened. He's probably a coward or a traitor. How do you know he wasn't? I know, because the United States of America does not award the Purple Heart to cowards or traitors. Susie looked away, but Nat blurted out, So big deal. So he fought for the United States. Maybe even got a medal. They're still better off with their own kind. Send them back to Japan, that's what I say. And my dad says the same thing, and so do a lot of other people. Ignoring his bitterness, Pat turned to the rest of the group. We started the All Stars to get together and have fun. It isn't fun any longer. It's something terrible. I make a motion to abolish the All Stars. I second the motion. Peggy and Meg leaped to their feet, giving seconds in unison. A strange warmth for the twins rose up inside her. She hadn't known if anyone would back her. She had thought she would have to stand alone. But Susie was shouting, You can't make a motion. There's already a motion on the floor. It wasn't in the form of a motion, Pat reminded her. All you said was, Let's take a vote. Pat's right. Another boy stood. We are voting on Pat's motion. Her face sullen, Susie muttered, All in favour of abolishing the All-Stars, say aye. A great shout drowned her out. All opposed? Only Susie, Nat, Karen and one other boy voted no. You'll pay for this, Susie growled, her mouth drawn into an ugly line. She was madder than Pat had ever seen her. At least I won't spend my life knowing I'm prejudiced and persecuting innocent people. But as Pat started out the door with the twins, she glanced back. Susie and Nat and Karen and Dick, the boy who liked Susie, had voted no, had gathered in a huddle. Let's form a new and exclusive club, Susie was saying. We'll be the Four Stars, and we'll be careful this time just who we let in as members. Hate seethed in the look she shot at Pat in the doorway. We can also get even with certain people. For a second, Pat shivered. She had never had anyone hate her the way Susie Parker did now. What would they do? If she hadn't stood up for what was right, would the All Stars still be going strong? Maybe. At least that's probably what Susie would tell herself. That night when Pat went to her room, she stood looking at the empty space on her wall where her picture of Christ had once hung. She thought of the little prayer that had come from inside almost in spite of herself, of the way her stomach had settled down and her hands had stopped shaking. Slowly she reached in the bottom of the big trunk and took out the picture. Not until it was back in its place did she realize how much she had missed it. I still don't understand. I don't see why Mike had to go through so much, or even why you did. But I do know that today, when I asked for help, it came. Somehow, I'm not mad anymore. Climbing into bed, she turned out the light. Maybe, just maybe, you do hear an answer. Pat had turned in her entry for the essay contest. She had recopied it carefully and handed it to Mrs. Smithson. I was wondering if I'd get one from you. The woman beamed. She had noticed Pat's lost look for a long time. Now it was gone, and in its place was the happy-go-lucky face Pat usually wore. She had also noticed Pat was spending more time with Mike now, that she no longer hung around with Susie or Karen. Her teacher was glad. She had seen trouble coming and considered it a good thing for Pat to be out of it. It took a long time for me to learn what I needed to write my essay. Mrs. Smithson remembered her comment as she read it, smiling to herself. Pat was growing up. It wasn't easy, but she was making it. "Did you get your essay in?" Pat inquired. Her friend nodded. She looked so happy these days, now that Pat was with her and Bonnie Moore. She hadn't asked about the All-Stars. She hadn't had to. The whole class was still talking about Pat's speech and how the club broke up. Mike knew Pat well enough to know she wouldn't want it mentioned. So, other than a little card that said, "Thanks so much," Mike left it alone. Maybe someday Pat would tell her. Until then, she was just glad to have her back. Pat had changed, that was plain to both Mike and Bonnie. The Kelly girl seemed more sure of herself, less worried about what her classmates thought of her. Cheerleading season was over for the year. Whether she'd make it next year or not, no one knew. But when Pat had stood alone that day in Susie's house, she had made more friends than she realized. One pretty spring day, Pat walked home with Mike. "Could you stay overnight?" Mike looked a little surprised. It was the first time Pat had invited her to stay overnight in a long time. Her face brightened. "Sure, if Mother says okay." Mrs. Mizuki was happy to see Pat and told her daughter it was fine. She had worried over whatever had come between the girls, but like Pat's parent, felt the two girls had to work it out themselves. Now, as she watched the curly blonde head next to the shining dark-haired one, she smiled again. It was spring and things were good. The long winter was gone, perhaps bitterness and hatred would go too, and her son Kobe would be home as soon as he could be released from the hospital. When the girls had snuggled down in the tower room and turned the lights out that night, Pat whispered, "Mike, that day when I had to stand up for what I believed at the All-Stars, something really funny happened." She relived those moments in the darkness of the room. "I knew I didn't have the courage to do it, but I said a prayer. At least something inside me said a prayer. It was the first one in a long time. I needed help. All of a sudden, it was like someone was right there with me, even before Peggy and Meg stood up. I didn't feel alone anymore." Pat could see Mike sit up in bed and open her mouth twice before the words would come. "Pat, that's what I meant when I told you about my friend in the center. Papa-san told me that when you really take Jesus Christ as your savior and friend, you will never be alone, no matter how many people are against you. You'll always be in the majority because you have Jesus." There was a whirlwind of feet and Pat plopped into Mike's bed. "Then you mean your friend, it's Jesus? Not Papa-san? All this time I've been jealous of Jesus?" "Pat!" Even in the dim light, Pat could see the shock on Mike's face. "I loved Papa-san, but how could he be my best earthly friend? You know you have always been my best friend and always will be. Did you really think I'd gone back on you?" "I'm sorry, Mike." Her voice sounded choked. All the tears she had locked inside for weeks spilled over. "That's why I went with Susie and her friends, I thought." Slowly, Mike relaxed. The look of disappointment faded. "I understand, Pat. The past isn't important. The future is what counts. But, Pat, especially after Papa-san died, I don't know if I could have come out of the center without terrible hatred and bitterness if I hadn't known Jesus." "I've been so wrong." "So was I, Pat. I should have made it more clear. If only I could tell people how I learned to know Jesus and what he did for me, it would make it all worthwhile." "Can you ever forgive me, Mike? And will he forgive me too? When I was small, I accepted Jesus, but all the time you were gone and God didn't help, I wondered if he even cared." She had the terrible doubt out in the open now. "He cares, Pat, and you're already forgiven. That's why he came." Once more, when Mike was asleep, Pat reached for her diary and flashlight. She had one sentence to write before she slept. March 15, 1946. "Please help me, God. I can't make it on my own like I thought I could." Chapter 9. April 1, 1946.
Wow, am I ever glad I got out of the club. Today our homeroom teacher read an announcement from the office. The principal said it had come to his attention there was a club discriminating against some people. It was to be stopped immediately. No club like that would be allowed in our school, and any members of such a club would be punished. I looked at Mike and Bonnie, and then at Peggy and Meg and the other kids who walked out of the All Stars. Were we ever glad we weren't in it any more? I guess Susie and Karen and Nat and Dick have a new club called the Four Stars. I wonder what they'll do about the announcement. It didn't take long to find out. The next morning, when Pat and Mike entered their homeroom, they found another message scrawled on the board. This school unfair to concerned students. The homeroom's teacher's face set in hard lines. And may I ask who did that? His pointing finger indicated his disgust. Pat couldn't believe it when Susie Parker stood up. Usually Susie let someone else take the blame. Now she held her red head high. Her green eyes were flashing. I wrote it because it's true. No one moved. Pat gripped Mike's arm. Now that the subject has been brought up, Miss Parker, the teacher's voice dripped icicles, would you care to explain? If some of us want to keep America for Americans, I don't see that it's any business of this school. She looked at Nat, Karen and Dick for support. Oh, is that what you're supposed to be doing? Nat jumped up, jerking Karen with him. She looked scared. You bet. He shook the girl a bit. Tell them what you found out, Karen. Pat almost felt sorry for her. She appeared as if she'd like to hide under her desk. Glancing around the room, she licked her lips. Was she wishing she could run? Susie glared at her. Go ahead, Karen. The girl looked frantically around for help and then managed to get out.
I found my uncle was hurt, really hurt. He was in Japan. It's going to be a long time before he can ever work again.
Her voice had almost a whine in it. Nat wouldn't let her sit down. He faced them all triumphantly. You see? How do you think Karen's uncle and a whole lot of other Americans just like him are going to feel when they get home and find their kids and relatives in classes with Japs, just like those who... That is quite enough, the teacher roared. He grabbed Nat by the arm, then glanced around the shocked classroom. Are there any others who feel the same way? No one moved. Then Susie stared at Dick. Reluctantly, he got to his feet and stood with the other three members of the four-star club. There are a lot more kids in this class who would feel the same way if a certain someone, Susie glared at Pat, hadn't brainwashed them into thinking differently. It was too much for Pat. Ignoring Bonnie pulling her skirt on one side and Mike on the other, Pat leaped to her feet. So long as we're talking about wounded soldiers, I think we should talk about Kobe Mizuki. The teacher motioned her to go on. Kobe Mizuki was so badly wounded he's been in hospital for months. How do you think he's going to feel when he gets home and sees the way his sister has been treated here in Kent? I imagine it will be a lot easier for him to limp the rest of his life than to see the very country he fought for, America, trying to get his family to leave. Pat looked at Karen and felt sorry for her. Karen, everyone feels bad about your uncle and about all the others who were hurt. But it can't be taken out on Japanese Americans who are just as much a part of this country as the rest of us. So they haven't been here forever. Neither have the rest of us. Pat had completely lost control of her feelings by now. All she wanted to do was strike out against the terrible thing that was threatening to tear their class apart. If you want to keep America for real Americans, all of us will have to move back to England and Scotland and Norway and a lot of other places and leave it to the Indians. They were here long before the rest of us. Bravo! Was that Bonnie leading a storm of clapping for her? Pat could feel her face burning as she dropped back in her seat. The teacher looked at the four who were on their feet. Every one of you knows Pat is right. Do you still feel the same way about America for Americans? Shaking her head, Karen sat down. So did Dick. Only Susie and Nat still stood on their feet. You will either apologize to Yoshi Mizuki here and now, or you will both be suspended indefinitely. There will be no more outbursts in this room or in any other. Hate curled Susie's mouth. I don't apologize when I know I'm right. Me neither, Pat looked at her admiringly. We aren't apologizing to any Jap.
The next moment the teacher rushed them through the door, leaving the room in utter silence as the door slammed behind them and their footsteps echoed down the hall. Pat felt wrung inside out, and Karen sniffled to herself. Dick looked miserable, but he slowly got up from his desk and crossed to Karen. "Come on, Karen." She stumbled to her feet and both of them walked to Mike's desk. Pat held her breath. "What now?" "I'm sorry, Mike. I just didn't know how far Susie was going to go, and Nat. Not that it excuses me." Karen's sniffles had turned to sobs. "Me too, Mike. I'm sorry." Pat watched Mike. She didn't even look angry. A pang of envy went through Pat. Would she herself ever be able to be like her? For the first time she caught a little glimpse of why Mike had thanked God for having to go to the centre. She had found so much there. The whole class waited. Then Mike said the same thing she had said to Bonnie in choir so many weeks before. "It's past now. What counts is the future." Three cheers for Mike. By the time their teacher returned, the classroom rang with, "Mike! Rah, 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 Mike!" But Pat could hardly wait until after class to ask her, "How could you do it?" "Mike, if Susie asked you to forgive her, would you?" Bonnie interjected. The Japanese-American girl sighed. "Yes, but it would be pretty hard." "I sure don't see how you could do it." Bonnie's pale face flushed. "But I don't see how you forgave me either." Before they could talk any more, the bell rang. "Meet me after school," Mike told them, hurrying off to her next class. Pat looked after her, the same tall, thin girl who had come from the center. No, not the same. She held her shoulders with a new confidence and assurance. On the way home, Pat demanded, "Are you some kind of saint?" Mike laughed. "Not me." Bonnie kicked at a pebble with her shoe. "I can see how with your friend it helps, but I could never forgive them or me if I were treated the way I treated you." Busy with her own thoughts, Pat nearly missed Mike's answer. She had been going to write her essay and read it to humiliate Bonnie. Now Bonnie was a real friend and sorry for what she'd done. "No one has spit on me yet," Mike said. "What?" "No one has spit on me. They did on my friend." Pat and Bonnie stared at her. Then Pat commented, "I know we're supposed to forgive people because God has forgiven us and everything." Her voice trailed off. "What confuses you? Honestly, don't you ever want to scream or pound people? It isn't easy to forgive people, is it?" Pat suddenly wished she hadn't asked. Mike looked sad and old. Her voice trembled when she said, No, Pat, it isn't easy. Yes, I want to scream and throw things. I want to fight back when I'm hurt inside, but it just isn't worth it. I can't forget Papa San saying it doesn't hurt the other person when we're bitter. It hurts ourselves." She was quiet for a long time as they walked along. Suddenly she stopped and leaned against a fence. Clumps of yellow daffodils bloomed in the fresh green grass around them. The sky overhead was spring blue with a few small clouds. But Pat didn't even notice as she usually would have done. Instead, she held her breath, waiting for the other girl to continue. Mike seemed to come back from a faraway place, eyes quiet and dark. "So long as I live, I'll never forget Papa San. I was so bitter, feeling the center had killed him. He knew I needed strength for the rest of my life. When he said, 'I don't want to meet my Heavenly Father while I'm hating anyone,' it did something to me. I didn't even recognize it right away. It took a long time to realize he was right. The past really doesn't count except for memories. The future can be changed because of the past. Papa San went to his future with the Lord with a smile and with peace." Her voice had dropped to a whisper. "If I could have I could have that peace, it would be worth anything on earth." She smiled at the other two girls. "I'm working on it, but as I told you, I'm no saint." Pat found herself unable to speak, and she could see a tear glistening on Bonnie's cheek. "I think we should be nice to Karen, don't you?" Mike said. "A lot of the kids will probably treat her just the way she's been acting. If we could sort of be with her for a few days, it might make a difference."
Section 4.
Mike looked at the other two for approval. Karen really isn't a bad kid, she just wanted to be popular. Pat felt her face turning red. Just like someone else I know. Bonnie and Pat walked off home. Boy, what a day, I'm beat. Pat yawned and stretched. Me too. But Bonnie wasn't quite ready to close the subject. I hope some day I can be just like Mike. Her face reddened the way Pat's had done. If anyone told me last fall I'd ever say anything like that. Yeah, Pat laughed and interrupted her. Remember how we almost had a fight in the hall because of a note you hadn't even written? Bonnie's eyes gleamed. The past is over. It's the future that counts, Pat finished. I'd better get home. Mum will wonder what's happened to me. Pat didn't tell her parents what had taken place at school. She needed more time to think it over. Not what Susie and Nat had done, but what Mike had said about wanting to scream and strike out at others. That night, Pat wrote in her diary, April 2, 1946. Bonnie said something today that really hit me. She said that someday she'd like to be just like Mike. I don't think Mike would like that very much. I bet she'd rather have Bonnie and me too try to be more like you. Pat glanced at the picture on her wall and wrote four more sentences in her diary. You know, God, after all this time it sure is nice not to be mad at you. Ken was right. You don't always do everything for us. Sometimes you expect us to help. Chapter 10, May 10. I sure haven't had time to do much writing lately. Kobe's home. He's awfully thin and pale, but he's sure glad to be here. Ken and I have been going over to visit with him as much as they'd let us. He talks about everything except the way he got hurt. Mostly he just tries to tell us about the funny things that happened. You can see he feels just terrible a lot of the time, but he doesn't let on much. Ken finally asked him how he got wounded, and Kobe said, "Just doing what I was supposed to be doing." Then real quick he changed the subject. The purple heart decoration is beautiful. By the way, God, I guess you do take care of things in really funny ways sometimes. Susie and Nat aren't coming back to school even after their suspension is over. Their parents told the principal that they would be going to a private school where there is a more select group. Good. Now I won't have to try to forgive them. I'm not like Mike, at least not yet, but God, I'm working on it. Even so, I have to admit it will be easier just not to have them around and be tempted to tell them off again. Did you ever see such a change in anyone as in Karen? Pat said as she and Bonnie headed home from school. Mike had left earlier to do an errand for her mother. Bonnie's face flushed. Yeah, me. They both giggled. You know, at first I really couldn't believe Mike was sincere after the way I acted. I suppose Karen feels the same way. Pat nodded. Dad's always preaching about love thy neighbour and love your enemies and all that stuff. Mike really makes it work. She laughed again. Love your enemies and drive them crazy. Come on, Pat, it's more than that. But Bonnie couldn't help laughing. It was good to have the bad feelings at school gone. Since Susie and Nat had left, there had been no more incidents. If others still felt prejudice, they kept it to themselves. Now everyone was excited about the end of school coming and the essay contest. You know, Bonnie, my essay really isn't very appropriate now. I wrote it a long time ago, but since Susie and Nat are gone, I don't think it has a chance. What is it about? I wanted a really neat name, one to impress the judges. I wrote it the night that big cross was burned at Mizuki's, so I called it The Smell of Prejudice. Sounds good to me. Why don't you think it has a chance now? Because it's all about people's prejudices. Since things have settled down, maybe the judges will think it might just get everyone all excited again. Bonnie shook her head. There are all kinds of prejudices, Pat. Think of the way the kids treated Karen after Susie left until they saw that Mike was with her a lot. You know, in the lunchroom and after school. Maybe the judges will think it's a good thing. But Pat wasn't so sure. I just don't think it will place. I really wanted to. You know, Bonnie, she dug her shoe in the dirt and didn't look up, when I first got the idea it was when I thought you... Bonnie glanced down at the road too. She still wasn't proud of the way she had acted the previous fall and winter.
"It's all right, Pat. The past is over. What counts is the future," Pat completed Mike's saying. They laughed again. It was too gorgeous a day to get serious. "Race you to my place." Bonnie darted down the street, Pat pounding at her heels. It had been a long time since they'd raced. Now that they were 13 going on 14, racing didn't seem grown up. But the strip down to the Kellys was pretty private. No one would see them. Pat was only 2 steps behind her all the way. The days passed, each one getting busier. Excitement about the essay contest ran high. All kinds of wild rumours circulated. Some said they heard the judges didn't like any of the entries. Others claimed that all of them were so good the judges couldn't decide. On June 1, just 3 days before the end of school, Pat scribbled in her diary, "Well, today's the day, or I should say tonight's the night. I know my essay is in the top 5. The parents of those in the top 5 have been asked to sit on the stage. I'm getting kind of scared now. If mine is one of the top 3, I'll have to stand up there in front of all those hundreds of eyes and read it out loud. All the students say they are coming, and their parents too. Why did I ever enter this contest anyway? P.S. Mike's essay is one of the top 5 too, and so is Karen's. I didn't even know Karen had written one. Wonder what it will be about." Pat and Mike had dresses alike for the contest. Mrs. Kelly had bought the material, and Mike's grandmother, Mama San, had made them. They were white and soft and simple, but when the girls put them on, they looked very nice. "I wish I were tall and slim like you." Pat eyed her short blonde self in the full-length mirror of her room. Mike laughed. "I was just wishing I were tiny like you." Their eyes met in the mirror. It was fun getting ready together. "I hope one of us wins. I don't even care which one." Pat really meant it. She had thought of it over a lot. It was great just to be one of the top 5. Besides, if Mike should win, it would show the whole school what a great person she was. The Mizuki girl's face got serious. "I was surprised they chose mine as one of the finalists. My subject..." She never finished her sentence. "Come on, we're going to be late," Ken bellowed up the stairs. "I have to get you there and go back for the Mizukis. Kobe can't drive yet with that leg of his." Pat never knew how she got to the stage, except that vaguely she remembered walking between Dad and Mom. Mike and her parents were seated down past Karen, whose aunt and uncle had come with her. In between sat 2 boys with their parents. "Mike never did tell me what her subject was," Pat thought, but then the roll of drums and the star-spangled banner distracted her. Never had she felt prouder singing it than standing there on the stage, scared to death, but gladder to be there than any place in the world. She had looked at her picture of Christ just before leaving her room. For a moment, a ray of sunlight had splashed through the window, almost making the picture seem to glow. Now she felt good, really good, to be there. When everyone was seated, the principal came out, and with him was Kobe. Pat could see by the faces of the Mizukis that they hadn't known he would be on the stage. "Tonight we have with us one of our soldiers, a Purple Heart winner," the school administrator said. "Kobe Mizuki will present the cash award for the best essay." A storm of applause went through the audience. Pat detected no sign of hate or prejudice in the audience response, just appreciation of Kobe's service to his country. She could have sunk through her chair. How could she stand up and read her essay after that? It now seemed out of place. Maybe she wouldn't have to, since only the top 3 would be presented. "We had originally planned to have only 3 essays read," the principal announced. "However, the judges felt there were 5 outstanding ones. We could not eliminate any of them. Since none of them is too long, we will hear them all." Cold shivers ran up and down Pat's spine. "They will be read alphabetically." Her mind frantically reviewed the names. Karen would be first, then John Gregory, then Peter Hall. She would be 4th, with Mike last. At least maybe she could pull herself together before it was her turn. The judges had quite a time with this first essay. The author evidently forgot to put her name on it. We had to trace her down by checking handwriting against the English department's records. Everyone laughed, but when Karen shakily stood and walked to the microphone, Pat knew that she had not left her name off accidentally. "My essay is The Bravest Person I Know." K
Karen's voice was barely audible, even with the microphone, as she read her paper. It told about the All Stars Club, not by name, but all the students in their class must have recognized it, and it described one girl who was willing to stand up to her friends and say what she believed. Pat sat rooted to her chair, almost in shock. That was her that Karen was reading about, and she had written it before the incident at school that led to the suspension of Nat and Susie. Pat shot a look at Mike, noticing her happiness. Then Karen had felt this way all along, even though she had gone along with Susie. Because of this person, I will be able to learn to stand up for what's right too, and do it a lot easier. The people clapped loudly for her, and when she sat down, Karen looked happier than Pat had ever seen her. John Gregory had chosen the title, What America Means to Me. Peter Hall's essay was on great Americans past and present. The audience loved them. Pat knew they were good, perhaps too good. She had lost any hope of even placing, but she still wanted Mike to win. If only she had asked what her topic was. But it was too late now. It was her own turn. The microphone looked miles away. Could she ever walk across in front of all those people? The smell of prejudice. Pat didn't dare look at the audience as she started reading, but as she got into the essay, the building faded before her. She went back to the time when a 9-year-old girl had run to her home in the middle of the night, telling them her house was on fire. Once more she heard her father's words, word not meant for her ears. I was afraid this might happen. She saw and smelled fire, the flaming symbol of prejudice. She relived the years when Mike was gone, confined in the center. She was asking God why over and over. She was experiencing her 13th birthday, waiting for Mike to come. And last of all, she was smelling again the smell of prejudice and fire, a burning cross on the Mizuki front lawn. Pat didn't remember reading much of her essay. She knew only after that she had read the last few sentences. The smell of prejudice is the worst smell in the whole world. It needs to be scrubbed out and washed away. It chokes people. It can even kill them. No one can get away from it. It has to be done away with forever. She heard a great roar like thunder. Had a storm come up? No, it was the crowd applauding. They stood applauding her, Pat Kelly, for her essay. Amazement overwhelmed her. They liked it. Her whisper reached only Mom, but Dad smiled at her. The clapping didn't die down until the principal went back to the microphone. Pat was still too stunned by the crowd to hear all of what he said. Only disjointed words registered in her mind. Next essay, Yoshi Mizuki. Subject is unusual, not quite what one would expect for an essay contest. Rules said contestants could choose any subject. Was the man apologizing for her essay? If he didn't like it, why had it been chosen as a final entry? Mike looked beautiful as in her simple white dress she walked to the microphone. If she was nervous, it didn't show. She stood still for a moment, looking across the audience. Then she glanced at Pat. What was Mike going to do? Her friend wondered nervously. Pat's fingers felt icy, and she clenched them in her lap under the pages of her own essay. Mike was up to something, but what could it be? It had shone in her eyes as she looked at her for just that quick instant. All of a sudden she felt Mike was miles away, alone in front of a crowd that had been friendly but could turn against the girl at the microphone in moments. Why should I feel this way? It's just an essay to be read. Surely Mike wouldn't do anything to cause trouble. Pat's inner voice didn't help much, and when Mike announced her essay title, Pat's gasp was lost in the words. The title of my essay is The Best Friend I Will Ever Have. Chapter 11. If Pat's life had depended on it, she couldn't have moved an inch. Her lips felt dry. She tried to swallow and couldn't. How could Mike do it? Religion at school in front of all these people. What would they think? Unable to look at the audience, Pat's eyes were glued on Mike. People didn't like to be preached at. They didn't like it at all. But Mike didn't preach. She simply read her essay. Most of you know that my family and I just came back from 4 years in a centre. Most of you know what a centre really is, a prison with barbed wire. If Pat had been watching the audience, she would have caught the looks of sympathy, the glances at Kobe, proud in his uniform, bearing the purple heart. But she was too nervous to glance around. Just when Mike had started being a real part of the school, this, everyone would call her a religious fanatic. It was the end of everything. All Pat's newfound faith began to crumble. Was God going to let it happen, after everything that had gone before? Yet in spite of her misery, as she watched Mike in front of the microphone, she remembered that Mike believed that with her friend she was a majority. Did she feel that way now, facing all those people? They could turn against her and start jeering and booing. Everything you have read about the centres is true. They are demeaning. It was terrible living there, not knowing when we could go home. I came to a place where I just didn't care about anything. Then I met Papa San. Quickly, Mike sketched in what he was like. Papa San introduced me to someone else, the best friend I will ever have. Pat could see the ripple of shock in the audience, the way eyes turned first towards Bonnie and then to her. My friend made all the difference. He taught me that no matter how I was treated, no one could hurt me inside unless I let him. A murmur spread through the audience. Pat looked down at her hands. Had Mike made them angry? She could feel perspiration on her hands and forehead. And then Papa San died. He had fallen and no one heard him cry out. He became sick, but when Papa San died, it was with a look of peace on his face. All the hatred and bitterness were gone. Tears streamed down Mike's face now, and she put down her essay. She didn't need it. She knew the words by heart, written out of her own great suffering. The audience had grown quiet. Pat's misery had steadied to a dull ache, but deep inside she knew that even if Mike lost every other friend except her best friend, she wouldn't lose her, not this time. If it hadn't been for the friend the old man had introduced me to, I guess I wouldn't have made it. He had been through everything I had and more. He had been treated terribly and still did not hate. I learned from the centre and from my friend just what human beings can do and what they can stand. But the most important thing I learned is that the past is over. What counts is the future. Pat couldn't resist glancing down at the front row. Bonnie was sitting there, her eyes filled with tears. Pat's heart gave a great leap. She had forgotten about Bonnie. Mike would still have some friends. Karen was another. Pat remembered her essay and glanced at her. She was crying too, and would stick. Pat knew that now. Maybe things wouldn't be so bad after all. There would be the four of them, even if their other classmates didn't have anything to do with them. But there were Peggy and Meg next to Bonnie, watching Mike as if they worshipped her. Mike will not have to stand alone. She has all of us and God. If only the awards assembly would be over so Pat could tell her right away. Mike was winding up her speech now. It was almost over. Good. The sooner the better as far as Pat was concerned. She could hardly wait to get to her. It hasn't been easy to write or read this essay. It brings back days that now I hope to forget forever. And yet I can't say I didn't learn from those terrible experiences. How could she talk like that, like she was 18 or 20? Pat couldn't get over it. It must be because, as Mike had said, in the centre even the children felt old. Mike had clasped her hands loosely. Because of what is past and the friend I met there, my whole life has changed. You see, the friend I met in the centre, the best friend I will ever have, is Jesus Christ. Her voice broke on the last two words. Her shoulders slumped. Now that it was over, she was tired, more tired than she had been since she came to Kent. She turned and, in the dead silence that followed her essay, walked slowly across the stage and took her place between her parents. For a long moment, the entire audience acted as if it had been turned to ice. No one moved. Then from the back row came the beginning of a mighty wave. A wave of people standing, crying, clapping for a 13-year-old Japanese-American girl who had dared to speak words that were true, words the audience recognized came from the deepest part of her heart. It went on and on. In vain did the principal try to quiet them, to stop the thundering applause that had followed that time of silence. And yet Pat knew the stillness had been even more of a tribute to Mike. It wasn't until the principal motioned to the band director and the band went into America that the people stopped clapping and began to sing. Old and young, teenagers, grandparents, parents, black, brown, yellow and white, but all Americans, they sang and then they seated themselves. I am proud of every one of these young people who are on the stage tonight, and of every one of my students. Another wave of applause, with students grinning, released from the tension of Mike's essay. I wish we could have more than one prize, but we don't. And yet I know that each of these contestants has been rewarded. The crowd became serious, and Pat looked at them, really looked, for the first time. We do have the $50 prize for the best essay. Also, we have certificates for the two runners-up. Kobe Mizuki will present these. He does not know who has won, only the judges know that. Picking up his crutches, Kobe crossed to the stand. Even the slight exertion took a lot of strength. It would be a long time before he could walk without his crutches, and then it would be with a limp. But he was radiant as he opened the first envelope and took out a certificate. Second place runner-up, Karen Ames, for the bravest person I know. Karen stumbled across the stage and took her award as the audience cheered. First place runner-up, Patricia Kelly, for The Smell of Prejudice. Pat just sat there and stared. She hadn't dreamed she would place even after her applause. Oh no, that meant that Mike wouldn't get an award. Probably it would go to John Gregory for What America Means to Me. It had been a good essay. Go get it, Pat. Dad's voice brought her to her feet, and somehow she managed to accept her certificate. She didn't deserve it, not compared to Mike's essay, if only. But Kobe was taking the large envelope of the $50 first prize winner. First prize goes to Yoshi Mizuki for... The applause drowned the rest of his words. Mike sat and stared, just as Pat had done. It's yours, Mike, Kobe grinned, holding it out to her. Finally she came to life and ran to him, but instead of taking the prize she threw her arms around her big brother and hugged him. No one quite knew what to do next, until in the side front row Ken Kelly and some of his buddies decided to take things into their own hands. Mike! Rah! 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 Mike! The essay contest came to an end, broken up with laughter. And yet it was not over. Pat knew that. She would remember forever a girl who had stood in front of a crowd and told them what she believed. The Kellys hosted a party that night. It seemed half the town kept dropping in. Some stayed only a few minutes, others settled down as if they owned the place. Pat grumbled as she ate cookies and drank punch along with Bonnie and Karen. Fine thing, we're Mike's best friends and we don't even get to see her. Karen just laughed. Cheer up, we'll get our turn. You're all coming home with me for a slumber party if these people ever leave. Finally the last guest left. Every cookie crumb and drop of punch were also gone. The Kellys, the Mizukis and Bonnie and Karen rested for a minute. Ken stared around the room. Boy, what a shambles. Come on, girls, I'll help. His sister's mouth fell open. A few weeks earlier she would have made some crack about his offer being pretty rare. Maybe even tomorrow. But not tonight. She was too happy. When they had completed the kitchen work, Pat whispered, Karen, could we postpone your slumber party? She looked a little hurt, then forced a smile. I guess you just want to be with Mike, huh? No, it's just that it's so late we wouldn't really get to visit too much. Bonnie yawned and hung up a towel. I was thinking the same thing. Me too. Mike looked tired. Okay, I'll have our party the night school ends and invite Peggy and Meg. Great, Pat replied. We'll stay up all night. Yeah, Bonnie chimed in. Glad your aunt and uncle have that sleeping porch. We'll hope for good weather and that way we won't bother anyone. Pat didn't tell anyone, even Mike, why she hadn't wanted to go to a slumber party. When they had all departed, she slowly climbed the stairs. She had something to do tonight, even though it was late. The clock was striking midnight as Pat curled up in her robe, picked up her yellow pencil and wrote,
June 1, 1946. This will be the last page in my diary. It doesn't mean that sometime I won't start another, but this is all for this one. 8 months have gone by since I got it. In some ways it doesn't seem very long, but mostly it seems years ago, so much has happened. The pencil paused for a moment. She stared at the wall, then at the picture of Christ that hung back in its usual place. How could she ever put down what she felt, the things she had learned? Maybe the fact that she was closer to 14 now than 13 made the difference. The pencil moved again. Some day I will take out this year's diary and read it. I will probably laugh at some of the things I've written. Maybe I'll even cry. It hasn't been easy to go through what we all did. Remember, God, when I told you I'd give you a second chance? I must have really been young. I wonder how many chances you've given me. Pat looked out her window. A light still shone in Mike's window. I wonder if Mike has ever kept a diary. Probably not. The way she carries everything around inside, she doesn't need one. With a grin, Pat resumed her writing. Even tonight I didn't dream it would turn out as it did. Who would have thought that group of people would clap for me, and especially for Mike? Did you have anything to do with that, God? I keep thinking about what Ken said, that you expect us to help too. Is that right? It kind of looks like it, what with everything that's happened. Boy, I'm sure glad you sent Mike back. I feel shaky just thinking how I wished she'd never come back. What would have happened to Bonnie and Karen and me? It sure is funny how one person can do so much. If I ever have to stand up for what's right and for you, God, I'll be able to close my eyes and see Mike there in front of all those people. The pencil fell from Pat's fingers. Slowly she took the key to her diary and locked it. Tiptoeing across the room, she hid it in the darkest corner of her top shelf. Tomorrow she would ask her father for a new journal so she could start all over. As Pat crawled back in bed and reached for the light switch, she glanced at the picture of Christ again. She thought of how blank the wall had been those weeks when she was so mad at God. "I know you've forgiven me. All those things in my diary," her whisper choked off. "I'll take it out and read it when I'm older. Now it's better to leave it hidden." A smile curved her lips. "The past is over. What counts is the future. With you." Her light went out. She no longer needed it. The last page in her diary had been written.
The end.